Welcome to Watching Westworld, the officially unofficial podcast for Westworld on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 1, Episode 5, titled Contra Paso, which apparently is a Dante's Inferno thing.
Oh, it's not the sequel to Contra? Involving running a pasta factory that's trying to kill you?
No, it's not.
If only you could find a spread fire, but the Linguini's going to kill you.
No, it has more to do with punishments for your sins in the afterlife, in hell. Essentially, it says it means literally to suffer the opposite, which is interesting because in Dante's Inferno, they talk about it being a process either resembling or contrasting with the sin that you committed during your life.
So Satan has an Alanis Morissette style understanding of the ironic punishments. Like, do you have examples?
Yeah.
Like, if you were a glutton, would you be starved? Would that be a contra paso?
Or you might be just overfed, like to the point of
brutality. Could be like
It's either or. So, like, a lot of the false prophets, I guess, were said to have their heads put on backwards so that they could. Since they were always claiming to be able to see what's coming, see what's ahead of them.
Now you have to stare at your ass.
Right. Now they could only see what's behind them, and they were forced to walk backwards. Stuff like that. So I'm not exactly sure how it ties in the episode. Obviously it does. Maybe we'll discuss that as
who's getting a punishment?
I don't know. Maybe the bots. Maybe Ford. Ford might be getting a punishment. Teddy's gotten plenty of punishment.
Teddy's getting some punishment. Maybe the man in black, that he's going to be cursed with getting exactly what he wants from the middle of the maze.
Maybe.
I don't know. It was interesting because last week I was feeling pretty good about taking all of the contrasting timeline theories, wadding them into a big ball of tinfoil and throwing them into the bit bucket.
Okay.
Known as my digital trash can.
Yeah.
But this week I felt like, you know, there's always been some smoke around that, some hints, but I thought like there was some first real concrete evidence, like the show itself is starting to embracing the alternate timeline. In alternate timeline, there are two timelines. That's a bad way to phrase it because we're not actually saying there's two timelines in a Rick and Morty sense
happening
of the word.
Simultaneously, right.
What we're talking about is essentially large swaths of the show being an extended flashback to historical events of the park. And the most popular version of this theory is that the William and Logan timeline happens just a few years after the disaster at the park that led to Arnold's death.
Right.
And that the man in black is somewhat related to those two characters. Some people say he's Logan. Some people say he's William. And that he has spent 30 years, you know, participating in this park and funding this park. And now he's wanting some kind of deep meaning. There's also sub-theories on that that say that the man in black is actually secretly the board representative sent to check up, that it's already there in the park, which would make sense. Since I was never really thought it was a great idea to have someone that you mention it's that important and that's not even been introduced into series.
Could people aren't assuming that that representative might be Logan himself?
Yeah, no, that could be.
Like that seems more obvious.
Could absolutely. And there's,
I mean,
of course,
he is there on business, we know.
So I think at this problem, the biggest threat is that anyone that wants to say that it's either all the two timelines or it's all current seems like they have one or two big problems that they have to hand wave to some kind of editing thing or some kind of trickery. And it's to the point where I'm really worried that no matter who ends up being right, that there's going to be a subset of fans that feel like they got hoodwinked.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that happens on, I don't know. In a lot of ways, I feel like encouraging that kind of show watching is not a fruitful thing to do with your audience. Like,
yeah, it's tough. It's tough in the Reddit era.
If I'm in multiple timelines, okay, maybe it's fun for a while to not realize it, but eventually I need to be brought into the loop and I have to appreciate why they're showing me multiple timelines. It can't be just for the sake of tricking the audience. That's not interesting.
Well, no, and I guess I trust the showrunners enough that I kind of dismiss that it's not going to, if they do the two timelines, it's going to be worth it. Like, right. There's something.
Like, what are they trying to say with multiple timelines?
There's something that they. Even it's just exploration of Dolores. I saw right. a lot of people saying, well, like a lot of anti two timers, let's say, well, I don't like this because it kind of cheapens Dolores' arc because we're watching a robot go through personal development that she's already gone through and got smacked down. I don't know that you could take it for granted that that's true, because it's kind of interesting to that if they use this first season to show that the robots are in some kind of Sisyphean task where they're doomed to continually push this boulder up the hill, achieve consciousness, and just have it roll back down.
Right.
Like, there is something...
That might be the contrapposite they're talking about.
And that also could be something that really sets in the whole... Like, if that's a late-season revelation that Dolores, on the cusp of achieving consciousness and freedom, is just going to be recycled back to, you know, her little loop... Again, that is kind of horrific and depressing, and something that would set you up for, like, you think that you've reached the bottom of the barrel as far as these robots experience, then you add this layer of kind of horror on top of it. It's almost like a Matrix reveal. I feel like people are being too quick to dismiss the dramatic concepts. Like, the two timers, it is kind of thrilling to see, like, they can show us Dolores going through these things instead of just hinting at them.
Right.
And do these long-form flashbacks. And also, if there's something to the Miss Man in Black's character arc and his struggle that started way back when, and they want to tell us both of those and kind of have this twist as a way to keep it fun, like, I'm not going to come down one side or another. Clearly, I was fairly anti-two timelines last week. This week, I'm not exactly a proponent, but I've got my eyes open to the real possibility that that's something they're hinting at.
Right. A lot of the stuff that I guess the multiple timeline theory is based on is stuff that they don't show us.
Mm-hmm.
And that always bugs me because, like, I want to focus on the stuff they do show us. And yes, they could be purposely trying to trick us, and it is valuable to look at what they're not showing as well, but let's lend a little more credence to what they are actually showing us.
Well,
right?
We'll see. I mean, as we go through this episode, unfortunately, the bulk of the feedback was all about the support and, the support and lack of support for these two theories. And we're going to be talking about that is probably a lot of the meat in the podcast. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the big reason I say, like, let's look at what they're actually showing us is because a lot of people who have the multiple timeline theories try to wave away the things they actually show us with just pure speculation, right? Like, they're showing you that because they want to trick you, because...
Yeah, I've seen that, but I've also seen on Reddit's becoming kind of militarized between the theorist and the non-theorist, and I feel like people, I think that's I've seen that as someone who's trying to remain neutral. I've seen that in both threads, like being, you know, appealing to, like, as soon as you have a problem with your pet theory, you start appealing to, well, what if, instead of, like, and because no one wants to just be like, well, let's wait and see. Right. I'm going to try to be like, well, let's just wait and see.
So there's something at the end of this episode which I think says something definitively about whether or not there are multiple timelines. I don't know that it says anything definitively about when particular things are happening or aren't happening. But I think it points to multiple timelines, and we'll talk about it when we get
there.
Okay,
and there's a couple other things where, like, I've, like, used the stubs commenting on things as proof, but then I read some timelines, and I went back and looked at some of these scenes and the editing around it.
Right.
And it only seems tricky in if you're contemporaneously watching the show. In retrospect, if you go back and look at that scene with the theory in mind, like, oh, I could see where this particular voice prompt and this particular cut effect is supposed to, in retrospect, be your key to deciding, you know, what... Kind of like you realize halfway through Memento that the black and white scenes are... you know, happening in real time, and the color scenes are slowly catching up to the black and white timeline. Like, those are like little hints that you don't appreciate in the first few minutes of the film, but you rather, after you see it, you understand, like, oh, this is kind of the key to understanding how these scenes are going back and forth.
Right.
We're halfway through the season, so it would make sense that it's not trickery. It's just a language that we don't fully understand yet, and we will appreciate and maybe see it as brilliant at the end, or could piss off a bunch of people.
And let me
we'll
say,
have to wait and see.
I used a word that I probably shouldn't use in this podcast ever, which is definitively. I don't know that you can say that about anything other than You know, honestly, even the facts that were given on screen that we could take as fact can be disputed in theorizing. This is where I start to get annoyed with the theorizing, is when people try to speculate against things that we actually see on screen.
Yeah.
And assign alternate meanings to those things,
right,
instead of the straight up reading of it.
Right.
Which, yeah, sure.
Like Stubbs
he's a Nolan brother, but come on.
Like Stubbs commenting on both William and the Man in Black's timeline, I think they're like, you either have to say that Stubbs is a host,
right,
which is something that's just conjecture made up to prop up your theory,
right,
or you got to say that there's no two timelines.
Yeah.
Now, when new evidence fits, like, wow, it really seems like there's two timelines, you then got to go back and look at, okay, well, maybe Stubbs is a host, or maybe there is some of this language being employed that is misdirecting us.
Right.
But until you get to this week, I wasn't inclined to buy into Stubbs as a host. Well, he's only a host because you need him to be a host to work with this theory.
Right.
A little bit more evidence, and that changes it. So, like, I, you know, everybody kind of stay on their toes and keep an open mind about this stuff is what I would say going forward.
Okay. So why don't we get into the recap?
Let's do it.
We see the beginning of the conversation. I think this is the same conversation that Ford had with old Bill. He tells a story about a greyhound from his childhood.
Oh, really? You don't think this is the same? So you think that Bernard is about to interrupt this?
Yeah.
There's a fourth timeline? What's going on?
No, I think they're about to interrupt it. We're just flashing back to the beginning of that conversation.
Why do you say that? Because
well, he ends it with the same line that we see him beginning it with, that let's toast to the woman in the white shoes or whatever.
See, I just took that as that's old Bill's limited repertoire.
Right. So that's what I mean when I say I think, because there are so many interpretations of this scene.
Sure.
And every single scene, every second, every frame of this show is being analyzed and reanalyzed. So
Although you're right, because like it was a big deal when he reactivated that guy.
Right.
Whereas
they took notice. They were like, oh, something's gone wrong in cold storage. Go down there and check it out.
But then also Dr. Ford acted like this is his drinking buddy. Like, he played it off as, like, oh, Bill's a good listener. Like, why?
Well, he can do whatever he wants
I know
to
he
do
can,
in the park.
But I'm
so,
saying,
like,
what I'm
he's
saying
not
going to
say, oh, sorry, guys, didn't realize you'd have
what
a problem
I'm saying
with
is,
this.
If he did this even on an annual basis, you wouldn't think it would cause a full response team to go down there and investigate it.
It felt like a one-off thing.
Yeah, so I guess that leads I don't know why I'm a stuttering mess even more than usual.
It lends CCR to,
yeah, it leads
to the argument.
There's a bad moon on this timeline, and it's old Bill's face. It's a sad, wrinkly, old cratered moon.
Yeah, and so we talked about like the Turing test, how it relates to old Bill, right? And that, you know, him blinking and moving like a robot doesn't necessarily mean he couldn't pass the Turing test. I think now definitively we know he couldn't pass that test.
No, you would think there's something neurologically wrong with him, and he's also got whirring servos.
Even put him in, not even that, but put him at a terminal, right? And communicate with him that way, and he thinks that you said showdown when you said greyhound. Like, that's not fooling anyone.
Not only that, but it reminds, because my son just got this Santa Claus app, where it purports to be a real-time chat so you can talk to Santa. Now, number one, my son already knows Santa's not real.
It just says ho-ho-ho over
and
over.
That's the thing. Like, some of these chatbots are pretty sophisticated. Yeah. But, like, a 10-year-old can be like, oh, here's why he's a faker. I can tell and I feel like that this old Bill is that style of chatbot. Like, he could, if you, within a certain parameters, but as soon as you start getting off in the weeds, Greyhound becomes showdown, or just a contextual, like, I didn't take it that he misunderstood it. I took it that he tried to find some context that, well, they're talking about some sort of contest or some kind of race, so I'll just throw this non sequitur about a showdown, and then when in doubt, go to the woman in the white shoes.
Either way, doesn't pass that Turing test.
Not at all.
Not even close. So, I mean, apparently, judging by his story and his chat with old Bill, it seems like Dr. Ford is bored.
Hmm.
We got a bored Ford on our hands, and he's doing shit that he shouldn't be doing, probably.
Or, see, I thought he was commenting on the Man in Black situation.
You think so?
Yeah, it's just about like what you do when someone who's been chasing something his whole life finally gets it and is unsatisfied with it, which ties directly. And now, obviously, you can see this applying to Ford himself if he is, in fact, bored, which I don't think a man with the undertakings that he's doing in a park seems bored.
Well, maybe he's achieved what he wanted to achieve, like he says about the dog. You know, he caught the cat.
Or he could also be talking about Arnold.
Okay.
Like, what if Arnold finally gets whatever his mysterious goal, and what is that? What's going to appease his disquieted spirit, or and however that's manifesting in the robots of the park? Like, I don't know.
Are you hypothesizing that Arnold is still alive?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I'm not ready to hypothesize or give it a big theory, but I think that there's already been enough evidence laid about transferring consciousness into these biological machines that it's not beyond the realm of possibility that Arnold didn't actually die in his accident. He just transferred his consciousness to some sort of robot or framework, and it survived on, and it's capable of being repressed. And maybe that's what Ford's plan is here with introducing religion, is like he's trying to recontextualize that or build yet another cage for the Arnold construct. Like, again, this is crazy theorizing. If this was sent to me in email, I'd be like, ha ha, delete. But I'm the show. I'm the co-host, so I get to say crazy shit.
I guess I'm not sure what you've seen that makes you think that transferring of consciousness is a possibility.
Well, I just remember in the first two episodes, people were always talking about what is the Dr. Ford's end goal. And he's talking about defeated everything but death. And we talk about these complex machines that can have consciousnesses transferred into and out of them. So people were already picking up on those. I mean, I can't think of all the evidence right now, but I know that that was in the air. So what if that wasn't a redirect, or what if that wasn't a drop plot line? What if that's still very germane and we're going to understand that Dr. Ford was actually talking about either knowing or coming to appreciate that Arnold is still kicking around in there?
Yeah, maybe. It's definitely possible, and
I think Dolores is talking
even crazier stuff.
I think Dolores is talking to Arnold, like, and I don't know whether that's just her bicameral mind. I don't know if there's a literal aspect of Arnold that's still in the mainframe, but I feel like that. Yeah, these are not well thought out theories, but I do think that there's stuff that the show is suggesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff the show is suggesting.
Sure.
I'm ready to move on to William's group arriving outside of Pariah. Dolores has a flashback that William notices, but she says, "Nah, I'm all right. Don't worry." Inside the city, Logan explains the business he's here for, which is a possible buyout of Delos, maybe.
So, and just as I poo-pooed the idea of Westworld running out of money and how the financial analysis was kaput and stupid, turns out that Westworld is either now or in the past hemorrhaging cash.
Okay, this is what I don't understand about Westworld. If Westworld is such a unique experience, and it caters to the ultra-rich looking to get their jollies off in a way that apparently the real world is incapable of supplying,
right?
Raise the price. Raise the fucking price if you've got a free-fall financial problem.
Well,
these people can and will pay it.
So maybe, maybe not. Like, there is a supply and demand.
There are people today who can and will pay $40,000 a day for privileges.
Sure, but
now
this
you're telling me
privilege,
with inflation, hundreds of years in the future, that $40,000 a day is too much and we can't raise the price any further?
I'm just saying, like, would Disney World be better off if they charged $10,000 a day to keep out the quote-unquote riffraff?
Well, they clearly can't cover their overhead, right? If regular people could go in for $10,000 or go into Westworld for $40 a day and fuck shit up and cause a whole bunch of repairs that need to be done.
Right.
Like, cover your overhead. If the overhead is $90,000 a day per person on average, charge that.
Well, but what I'm saying is, like, there's supply and demand, like economics 101. If there's not enough whales in the world to support what that in price increase, if you need it to appeal to more people, the other solution would be to have more engaging plots so people like, Westworld did that, done that. I don't know. Like I said, it's...
Right, but clearly you can't just have people coming in willy-nilly destroying your shit. Like, people don't go into Disney World and destroy shit.
Sure.
Ride the rides. They've built in the cost for the overhead.
I'm just trying to say
that
to you what I said to the other people at the chalkboards last week. Like, if you're if you got your chalkboard out and you're saying stuff and QED Westworld is wrong, like, if it was clearly a case if they could just increase the price to $1 million a day, they probably would, right? So either Dr. Ford doesn't want that to happen, mm-hmm. or the board doesn't want it to happen, or they've done some kind of model where that's not or it's
clearly they haven't done it. You're right.
The other thing, the elephant in the room is the two timelines theory neatly applies this, that the founder of the park recently died in the park, recently defined as
recently
within a few months or years.
Why do you say that?
Because
he just says right before the park opened.
Right.
Partner killed himself.
But so why?
That to me sounds pretty historical.
Right. But he says that they're actually looking into buying them out right now. They're hemorrhaging cash right now. And that mm-hmm. makes it seem like something they haven't suffered for 30 years, but more of a recent setback.
I agree with that. I was going to ask you, like, how do you think that a park could sustain itself in a 34-year financial freefall?
No, not with this kind of overhead.
Right.
So. Now, it could be that he's like, we are parsing his words incorrectly, but
right.
I think this is pretty strong evidence that there's a multiple timeline, because either the park has suffered another setback that's caused him to hemorrhage cash recently, or this is still something that's come out from the partner dying. And the fact that the thing that doesn't make sense is, like, if his partner was, like, just a couple years ago or even a couple months dying, how does no one know it? How can a team of lawyers turn the thing upside down and not find it?
Yeah, and I mean, you don't necessarily have to say that the park is still in free fall.
Right.
Necessarily.
It'll still be hemorrhaging cash. Like, well, maybe they made enough in the glory days that, like, Microsoft could hemorrhage cash for a decade and not and be okay. Probably Apple,
right,
too.
But I wonder, like, is he implying that the free fall is happening currently, or is he saying that after the park opened, it went into free fall? Maybe.
But they say
recovered.
We're considering buying them out, which
right.
implies a softening to where an outside company can snap them up.
Does it? I mean, because a lot of companies get bought out when they're growing.
Yeah.
They're showing massive growth. Maybe
that's
they're
true.
On the upswing.
That's true.
At
that
the
seems
park.
Weird
so,
on a 30-year-old park, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we got VR tanks to discuss. We got a whole lot of stuff to discuss.
Oh, sure.
So
the fact
who
that
knows?
You know why they're hemorrhaging cash? Because apparently they're fighting a civil war at the fringe of this park, and no one's
yeah.
going.
Yeah.
Like, there's thousands dying, and it's Gettysburg every fucking day.
Yeah, these bots need repair.
And one person out of 1,000 discovers it. You know,
yeah.
that could be a reason why you're hemorrhaging cash.
Yeah, maybe cut that one, Lee.
Mm.
Oh, I know that's Lee's storyline. I know it.
Yeah, so here's the other, I guess, non-obvious timeline. So when William and Logan first came to town, we noticed that the sheriff recruiting for Hector had been replaced by a Union Army recruiting, okay?
Right.
And we wrote that off as like, well, Hector just storyline completed. We also know that Hector is not complete. He was he had been reset and he's in jail and they're going to go bail him out in the contemporary Man in Black storyline. So Hector's still around in the contemporary storyline, yet they're recruiting with their Union soldiers in William and Logan's storyline, and we know there's a civil war raging on the fringes of Westworld.
Mm-hmm.
Does that not imply that we got schnookered with some clever editing? Because there's been no hint of any kind of civil war story other than Dolores' father formerly fought in it in any of the contemporary storylines, yet there's civil war all up in William and Logan's timeline.
Yeah.
Well, storyline. Right. I'm not going to grant it complete timeline status yet.
Sure. I mean, that's put it on the pile of
the two times, the two timer, the two timer, pro two timer.
Yeah.
Camp.
We're going to get some actual literal scales here on camera pretty soon.
That would be sweet.
Yeah.
If we actually had an old scale and
we're
going to
take like stickers and we're going to write the evidence
yeah,
and put it on
yep,
the scale.
Yep. And see which one is heavier.
Week
you
after
know?
Week. Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of interesting. So, Dolores also says some stuff like, show me how.
Find me. Yeah, when she hears the voice saying, find me.
Right. So, in the past, we have assumed, or I think there's actual evidence to say she's talking to Bernard.
Well, now.
But who knows which, like. If that's always the case.
And that's the other thing is, her talking to Bernard, we always wondered, like, why is she clothed? And is that just because he, like, is it possible that when we see Bernard talking, that is just her bicameral mind interpreting what direction she's getting from the Arnold construct? Jesus Christ,
it might
I
be.
Sound insane.
I don't know.
I mean, that would neatly explain why her interview with Bernard seemed to come out of nowhere in the timeline with William. That was either a flashback or a flash forward, or her kind of recontextualizing her experience with this stuff as a dream state. And I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think so. So the Man in Black sees that Teddy is dying, and he stops to fix him up. And the boy, this boy who may or may not be Ford as a kid, approaches them, and the Man in Black sends him for water. He then drains Lawrence's blood into a bag, slices open his throat, hangs it from a tree.
So it seems weird that you can transfuse or maybe even pour blood down their gullet. And
I mean, they're not going to be like A positive or
no,
O negative,
so.
Right? They're just going to have robot blood.
Yeah, and the other thing is like the fact that he was able to control Kissy by draining a precise amount. There's like, I mean, the show's used its language. Like, I don't know how or why, but these robots are blood dependent. Like, they're aware enough of their own physiology to correctly say, well, I'm getting low on blood. It's about time to die. And Man in Black is using that at both ends to either keep the person alive or make him complete. I mean, it seemed like he could just tie up Kissy and drug him. Why did he have to drain his blood like that?
I don't know.
Was he going to use that to save another robot? Like, that stuff is just. Does that imply some medical training, or is he literally just like pouring this down Teddy's throat? It's like some kind of vampiric thing.
Well, I mean,
I wish we'd seen the process.
No. It could just imply that he's experimented in this world a lot, right?
But the fact that we haven't seen the process makes me think that they're saving, that's going to be a trick up their sleeve for later on. Like, why be ambiguous about this blood loss and bloodletting and blood begetting if you aren't going to make it germane to the plot later?
I mean, I don't know.
Or it could just be no one cares but me. I want to know how this.
Right. I mean, it might just be a thing where they're like, okay, this is how it works. He can, right. If you take blood out, it makes them weaker. If you put blood in, it makes them
stronger.
Could
you use human blood?
I doubt it. I don't know. I mean,
I feel like these robots are just flesh and blood, man.
Yeah, but that...
With some implants, of course, because we see there's a spinal implant that has some kind of GPS tracker, and they're definitely augmented, but they have real flesh and blood bodies.
Right, but then you do come down to, like, is there some kind of immune response that they have? Would they even
accept the blood? They get a staph infection.
Right.
Can they get a sexually transmitted disease?
That's what I mean. Like, could you give them any old human's blood and have them get better? I doubt it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't think it works the same.
Sure.
Anyway, it's also interesting. We find out a little bit more about the Man in Black. He is a very powerful man in the real world, apparently, because he says, there's not a man in the world who'd take the tone with me that you do when Lawrence is talking shit to him.
Yep.
So,
and if there's not enough to discuss, the little boy who might be a younger version of Dr. Ford shows up and asks him if they're lost for... It seems like that might be his purpose in the park. Like when people stray too far from Sweetwater and they, you know, they're just to check up like, hey, are you guys lost? If so, I can redirect you. If not, then go on your way.
Right. So the mechanics are fixing up Maeve. One of them freaks out about the other guy. Freaks out when the other guy moves her arms. And then they both that guy takes a break to go to the VR tank. And the other guy has a bird in his locker. Felix, I think, is this guy's name.
An homage to Leftovers. They're going to be resurrecting birds.
Right.
With shoeboxes and whatnot this season.
Yep. So this is where things start to get... Another layer is added to this whole fucking thing because now we don't know what's VR and what isn't, because they apparently do have VR tanks. And I don't know, A, why you need a whole tank for VR. Maybe there's some sensory...
That's what I'm saying.
Either sensory deprivation or augmented sensory...
Yep, that's what my thought was.
...interface that the tank allows.
Right.
But this...
They're not
so
clearly not allowed
to
take free rides on the company's merchandise.
Right. So I think that has implications for the VR that we haven't actually seen
yet.
Like
the VR is lesser than...
Right. Right. Why would you need a park where you can go and... interact with real life robots if you have a VR tank that works perfectly? You probably wouldn't. So this VR tank probably is
not
great technology.
Right.
It's much better than what we have, I'm sure.
Sure.
It's not a Vive, but
sure.
it's it's probably not perfect.
Right.
Also, it could be cheaper.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's a given. These guys don't seem like they're high-paid technician. They feel like blue-collar dudes. They're doofus. Yeah. I mean, this especially the bearded one is just a fucking jackass.
Yeah.
Like, at least Felix is trying
to... I like him. I think he's hilarious.
At least Felix is trying to improve his lot in life, right. You know? Like, I identify the guy as trying to run some kind of, you know, project box on in his free time and his nights and weekends, but...
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. So I think if we assume those things about VR, we can say that what we're probably seeing in Westworld is not VR. And that these discussions that Ford is having with Dolores and Bernard is having with Dolores are probably not the VR tank.
I agree.
Okay.
I don't think there's anything VR in Westworld, at least that seems like it's increasingly unlikely.
Okay. So the Man in Black explains to Teddy that he used to be beautiful and his face is all kind of fucked up, so it's pretty ironic here. Or pretty spot on, actually. Before the people who run the park turned him into a meat-based fuck puppet. and then he gets him back on the path by telling him that Wyatt has taken Dolores.
Right.
And this kid comes back with the water and sees what has happened, the horror show that is Lawrence. And Man in Black and Teddy just ride off.
Right. So he's talking about, when he said he used to be beautiful, he's talking about the fact that he was full of these clockwork mechanisms.
Right.
And so I thought it was interesting.
An actual robot.
Yeah. So that blows apart my theory that, like, by the end of the 3-year creative period that they had the fully functional organic hosts.
Right.
That for some time they were just like the old Westworld movie robots where they actually had clockwork mechanisms and they were just openly robots. But I think it's weird that he says the truth of the matter is that humanity is cost effective because, like, from his jaded perspective, maybe he preferred when they were clockwork mechanism type robots. But I bet your average guest likes blowing holes, big bloody holes in robots, like fucking a meat robot. Those seems like subjectively a better experience than something that's synthetic and you can hear whirring and whatnot.
Yeah, certainly more realistic experience.
Right. But I mean, I don't know how much of what the Man in Black says he actually means and internalizes and how much he just says to amuse himself or to make himself seem badass, because he also says that he's playing a part, which is the ultimate his he sees himself as the villain the park should have, which is so all the stuff he says, you can't dismiss that there's just dramatic possibilities there, that he's just being dramatic. He's the bad guy and he's tormenting the hero for his own amusement. And it could be just that, because otherwise you got the dude just liking the way, you know, like, I miss the days when it was all carburetors, these fuel injectors, bullshit.
Yeah, and I mean it could even be that he's there to torment Ford himself.
Sure.
I mean, they are on a first name basis.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe he sees the solving of this maze as tormenting of Ford. Anyway, Dolores sees another flashback of death. William strikes up a conversation where he mentions the real world, and Dolores, to his surprise, takes notice of it. He thought she wasn't supposed to notice things like that.
She's not.
Then
you're right.
a parade comes through with Logan at the front. He wants to go to a brothel, but before they can accomplish that, Dolores sees herself in the parade and tries to catch herself.
I think so.
But she's shut down by Dr. Ford. This is super easy to miss at the end of this scene. And this is one of those things where I go, if in fact this is multiple timelines, they're playing some dirty tricks with editing. Because what they're trying to say here, I think, is that Dolores was in this crowd. Dr. Ford pulled her by shutting her down, had a conversation with her overnight, and then put her back into the park.
Okay.
That's what the editing says.
Do you? Yes, but do you dispute the fact that Dolores has been on two? I mean, she has lived through a vast majority of this stuff at least once.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, they made that pretty explicit.
She's having are real.
So the editing choices you're making could be them showing that she's flashing, because we know that she was in this town before because she saw Lawrence's child. They even showed the tombstones that they walked past to get to Pariah. So it could be that we are seeing her in one iteration and that she's being plucked out of the current iteration where she doesn't meet William. I don't know what she's doing, but
Yeah, the thing that gets me, though, is Ford shutting her down.
But
because
why could
Ford's voice, and it sounds like an old voice.
Right.
It doesn't sound like his what he would sound like when he was a little younger.
But see, every time we see Dolores in a reverie, mm-hmm. I'm going to call it, she's alone. And then William steps up to her at some point.
Okay.
So I wonder if, like, we are going to appreciate that she's actually tracing these footsteps alone, but she's remembering right. the time she's with William.
Right.
So she saw herself in the crowd from when she was with William before,
right.
went to go chase that, and then got recalled by Dr. Ford. Because yeah. otherwise, I will go even further. It's like, there doesn't seem to be a continuity break where William could be like, hey, where the hell did you go all last night?
Mm-hmm.
Which he would have had to have said if Dr. Ford went and snatched her from the contemporary timeline.
Right? He does come back and he questions, like, how she was feeling the previous day, but not
sure.
like, where she went.
Like, yeah, like, you just fucking disappeared right. last night, and you were gone all night, and now you're back. Like, I feel like that would be... So that's, I think, kind of evidence that there is two timelines, because...
But let me throw this wrinkle
sure.
in. She's following herself in that parade, right? She doesn't see herself with William. She doesn't see herself with Logan. She's just by herself.
Sure.
So, like, she clearly goes off alone.
Yeah. I do think that
in both timelines,
you're right,
if there
you're
are
right.
multiple timelines. So,
it's not a smoking
saying that
gun.
William is, like, missing a clear path here is not...
Well, I'm not, and I don't think that. It's more like, wouldn't William's natural reaction be like, where the hell were you? Not like, oh, I'm
but
glad you're
But it's clearly
feeling
not,
better.
Because in both timelines, she's off on her own. Now, maybe they meet up before then. Like, that night or something.
I guess. To me, that's the type... You're going into the special pleading category of when people's... The theories don't quite... And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, there's the evidence
but
the one
both
thing,
cases
there's the evidence
are,
the
yeah.
other. Yeah.
I think both cases are trying to support their own claims.
Sure.
And I'm not coming down on a side.
No, I feel
it
like...
It could be multiple timelines. It might not be.
Just like, you know, a lot of times I praise The Leftovers and how skillful they're able to, you know, tread the line between what is... Mm-hmm. What is a spooky supernatural phenomenon and what is, in retrospect, a rational phenomenon. I feel like this show, you know, is doing a really good job of making it hard to say definitively what timeline you're in and how many timelines and what's all. But I think that the only thing we can definitively say is we know that Dolores has been through this loop at least once before.
Right.
Because she's flashing back to something.
Right. And
the question is whether William and Logan are part of that flashback.
Mm-hmm.
And whether, I guess, William is the man in black or Logan's the man in black.
So, let me throw another wrinkle in here.
Sure.
Later on, she finds her way to a fortune teller.
Uh-huh.
And she sits down at the table, and she pulls a maze card out of the tarot deck, and then she sees herself. That clearly is not a flashback. That is a hallucination. That is imagination, right?
Why do you say it? I mean, I want to play devil's advocate.
Because she's talking to herself.
What if at some point in the park's history, Dolores was the fortune teller?
Okay. I mean, it's possible, but she wouldn't be on the same path.
Right.
Like she would... I mean, so now she's seeing multiple points of her history?
I don't know. I'm just saying that that's something that's in play, that she... Mm-hmm. Because we know that she's played multiple roles before, she could play multiple, and this the fact that she's seeing herself...
Sure.
In different places. But, you know, I think you're right. My gut, now that I'm out of devil's testicles mode, the devil's advocate mode, I agree. I think that that's supposed to be read as a hallucination.
Here's the other
thing. The fact that robots are hallucinating is already kind of like, whoo.
Well, I mean, this is interesting in context of the bicameral mind specifically.
Sure.
Because, you know, that's a theory that basically says that people interpreted their own will sort of as an outside voice.
Right.
Kind of. It's complicated. But at the beginning of this scene, she says, you know, she had to get out of her life. When she ran away, I told myself it was the only way.
Right.
So she clearly is recognizing herself in this second voice, this mm-hmm. other section of her mind.
Yeah.
That's driving her. And you could also say that her seeing the fortune teller as herself telling her to do a thing
right.
is part of that.
Sure.
And that imagination would be part of unlocking the key to, what, the unicameral mind, I guess?
Yeah, no.
Like joining those two parts?
Sure.
In a way that we can understand?
Yeah, no, it's totally possible. In fact, okay. I think that like the fact that her voice, that voice that she's hearing is like some has been. I think they've used Bernard's voice. They've definitely used Bernard as if that's indeed what he is as a construct. I think they've used Dr. Ford's voice. Now they're using what seems like a distinct voice. Mm-hmm. I think these are all aspects of her. Like, I don't think these are actually, you know, I mean, I did stump for the Arnold as a construct idea, but I actually think these are all ideas coming from within her that she's interpreting
right.
as these external forces acting on her.
Yeah, that lines up with the bicameral mind.
That's how she's becoming aware of the fact that she has this conscious self.
Right.
And tracks along with, if you remember the research we did in the bicameral mind, ideas that like 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 years ago, man, it's not like he suddenly became conscious. It's just he became aware of the framework to analyze his internal self as something distinct.
Right.
So I think that's super cool and interesting.
Yeah. No, it really is. And I like how they're playing with these flashbacks, these memories and these hallucinations, imaginations, whatever, as a way to kind of show the burgeoning consciousness.
Yeah.
Also, it's really cool.
I don't know if this is something, but I thought it was cool that they got the Day of the Dead festival lined up mostly for Halloween.
Uh-huh.
Do you think the shows deliberately do that? Like, is that part of the scheduling? Like, hey,
maybe.
Wouldn't it be cool if we did the, you know, since we've got like probably a 6-week window, they could have launched Westworld since it was mm-hmm. delayed. It's like, hey, we got this Day of the Dead. Like, let's do it on Halloween, or I guess Halloween Eve.
Yeah, I don't know. They're probably overriding concerns, but if
sure.
you can make
yeah,
it line
yeah.
up, why not?
Yeah, like if it's just like, hey, what do you want to go? Do you want to start this weekend of September 1st or weekend yeah. of September 7th? They're like, hey, Day of the Dead, you know.
Yep. Okay, so Ford sits down with Dolores and philosophizes about making your own path. Then he asks her if Arnold has been speaking with her again. She says, nope, it's been 34 years since I talked with the old Arnold. And last time we talked, he wanted me to help him destroy the place. And Dolores asks if they're old friends, and Ford says, no way, man, and he leaves. And then sitting in the dark, Dolores says aloud, he doesn't know. I didn't tell him anything.
Ah, the fool.
Who's she talking to?
I know another fan theory died. There was this theory that the reason that she's shown clothed is because Evan Rachel Wood has a no-nudity contract. I always think that kind of speculation is kind of gross. Like,
what do you mean?
Speculating on whether people you know, don't want to be nude or not in television or movies and that. And I mean, I guess that's just as valid as looking at any other part of the contract, but it always feels kind of icky. Like okay. the reason that Daenerys isn't naked in any is because now she's become Emilia Clarke has become famous and she doesn't want to be nude anymore. And well, no, just wasn't dramatically necessary to have her naked in every fucking scene.
Right. And we'd rather, like, her preference is probably not to be nude on camera.
Sure.
Most people's is.
Sure. And, like, you know,
and
it's
if
like,
we don't need her to be,
I guess
don't
what it feels,
make her
there's
be.
A little bit of element of, like, they owe it to us to be naked, like, kind of in that.
Okay,
like, oh,
yeah.
you got no spoil sport, no nudity contract. So
I don't know about you, but when I go into a movie, I expect to see every single actor and
sure,
actress nude.
Sure.
And if I don't, I'm disappointed.
And if you Google them and you can't find them naked anywhere on the internet, it's a goddamn tragedy. Travesty.
And you got to do it between the ages of 22 and 26, because otherwise I don't want to see it.
Okay. All right. I think we've grossed out everybody now.
There we go. Mission accomplished.
So the interesting thing about this is that he says you've been dreaming again, which, you know, we already knew she's on two separate loops, but the fact that he is saying, like, and it also ties her to these events with Arnold. And also makes
it
seem like she was the villain, like that she betrayed Arnold.
Well, does it? I mean, maybe she was willing, but we know the Man in Black stopped whatever was happening from happening.
Well, he claims credit anyway.
Okay, that's fair. And Dolores claims no credit here. She just simply says, he wanted me to destroy the park.
And did you? No, I didn't. And he goes, tell me, if you were to play that part, would you have seen yourself as the hero or the villain?
Right.
Like, it's interesting.
But she doesn't
thing.
Answer. She's not.
Well,
like,
and it's also, did he expect her to answer? Because this is a
question.
Weird thing for someone who is seems very anti-robot consciousness to ask. Like,
that wasn't a rhetorical question, Clarice.
Yeah.
I expect an answer.
Yeah, right, right. Analyze this shit. But he also asks him, do you remember the man I used to be?
Right.
Which implies...
Right after invoking Arnold's name. Or actually, before invoking him.
Yes.
In scare quotes.
True, true.
And then invoking Arnold's name directly. So
right.
People who want to speculate about Ford perhaps being Arnold, I think got a little more fodder for their canon.
I don't go that far in speculation, but like as a right. person who said, I wonder if at some point in the last 30 years, Dr. Ford and Arnold's viewpoint, or Dr. Ford has come over to Arnold's viewpoint. Like I sat up and paid a little bit more attention to this.
I think that's what the Greyhound story was about at the beginning.
Right.
And I've always had this opinion of Ford, and it's been largely based on scraps of dialogue. And
But here's the key thing. She asks him, are we very old friends? And he says, I wouldn't say that we're friends, Dolores. I wouldn't say that at all, with tears in his eyes. What the fuck does that mean? Did she kill Arnold, and he tried to stop it, and he's got this kind of like grudge against this machine? Is she based on like a daughter of his that he lost? That Arnold then used to corrupt his plane. Like, why the weepy eyes?
Right.
With Anthony Hopkins here.
I don't know. I mean, it's possible that...
Did he overdose on Restasis the night before? And he just uncontrollably, like, Anthony, we need you to drive. I'm trying.
He just got out of the VR tank where he experienced something truly horrific.
Yeah, you don't want to go into a room full of naked bots with you know...
Not after
full of steam. You got to take care of that in the VR tank first, so you can just it's all business. All business right. in the glass booth.
So let's go down the theory hole here for a second. Let's say he is Arnold.
Okay.
How does that change the context of the teary eyes in the conversation? Cuz to me it could say he asks her like, "You, what were you supposed to do?" "Oh yeah, I was supposed to destroy the park and you didn't, did you?"
Yeah, you fucked
Are
me.
We friends? No, we're not. And now he's sad that she didn't destroy the park. Maybe if Arnold were to take it in that context,
yeah,
he would be sad about the fact that he employed her to destroy right. the park and she didn't do it.
I guess the problem I have with any literal Arnold is Dr. Ford, Dr. Ford is Arnold, is what purpose would it serve to fake your death and become someone else?
Right.
When you're already presumably a rich and famous person that's...
I mean, maybe they were going to take your baby away. Maybe they were going to take the park away from you.
But how would
that
work?
Ideas were too...
Like, you know, even if, you know, even if you were relatively obscure and unknown, you're committing this giant identity fraud at a very high level, visible place, you know?
This is why I'm talking about the theory hole here.
Sure, yeah.
It's all speculation. What if you're the one who wants to talk about uploading consciousness? What if Ford is a bot? And then Arnold has uploaded his consciousness into the replicant of Ford.
It is so weird to hear Dr. Ford talking about robots as not being like that's. I guess it's weird for me. They'd have to explain like is that that's how he hides in plain sight. He's like the most anti-robot guy there is because he doesn't want people to know he's a robot. It's essentially
right.
like why. You know, does it seem like you're always catching Republican congressmen having sex with boys? When you know, it's like I don't know.
For the record, I think it's more likely that he is not Arnold, and that maybe potentially the Man in Black is Arnold.
Yeah,
there's also that possibility.
Gotcha.
I don't have any evidence to necessarily.
I don't think the Man in Black is Arnold because that whole conversation in a bar, I think, would have been completely different had he been Arnold.
You think so?
Yeah. And I do feel like Arnold died in some understanding of that word. Like, he might have transferred his consciousness, but I feel like his physical body was destroyed. It was something. It was a big blow to the park.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I speculate for the sake of speculating.
All right, let's crawl out of the theory hole.
Okay, well, one more thing to talk about here. Some more information that we get. He says there's no one left who understands as we understand.
Oh,
so
yeah, right.
So whether you think he's Arnold or not, it implies that one of those partners is dead, probably Arnold, and that. I mean, he's got to be aware of the Man in Black at this point.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
I think he was aware from. I think if you're right about the old Bill conversation being the same one that we saw in the beginning, I think he became aware of the Man in Black coming to the park that day.
Yeah, probably so.
And he was contemplating about this guy's quest and you know all that stuff, and maybe he was sent from the board, maybe not. But that I think he was aware of it from day one.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to say is that. The fact that he says that there's no, I haven't contacted and there's been no record since, does that put any pizzazz? Because we know that one thing Bernard was doing was clearing out the records of their contact. Is there any hint that Bernard is actually not Bernard when he's talking to her in these tanks and they're she's fully clothed? Is that supposed to be our hint retrospectively to know that that's actually Arnold speaking to her and she's interpreting it as Bernard, something that she's familiar with? Because that would solve a lot of the problems we had with the timelines of, like, well, how the hell did she get abducted in the middle of the desert from William to go talk to Bernard? Like, if these were just conversations she's having in her dream state with the Arnold construct or whatever piece of her programming, and she interprets it as Bernard talking to her.
Right. Yeah, I honestly, I think a lot of this makes more sense in the context of multiple timelines.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, on this path, then it's not necessary that she completes the path in a single day or a single cycle. And she could be easily pulled from the park without anyone being the wiser, right? Like, there is no William in the modern context to worry about missing her.
Yeah, that's so dead on.
The other thing we know for sure is that 34 years ago, Arnold died. That's exact number of years.
And
so,
42 days and 7 hours, if you want to be specific, right. Yeah.
I think 34 years is nice, a nice solid number to put your finger on, unless... No, you can't even believe that Dolores is somehow lying here. She could be lying about that being the final contact she had with him, and that she hasn't talked to Arnold since then. But she can't fool Dr. Ford about when his death happened.
Yeah, so totally.
That's concrete. Then we go over to the mechanic experimenting with his bird, Felix. He's trying to fix it when the other guy comes in. He can't believe that Felix stole this bird, and he tells him to destroy it. And then this guy wheels in a dead Maeve again, which apparently disturbs the shit out of Felix. I don't know why, though.
He should have been his...
Is this his third day on the job? Like...
I mean, I think we're supposed to understand he's kind of wet behind the ears, or like, I mean, the fact that the guy, the other creepy bearded dude, is like, what the fuck's wrong with you? How did you not get weeded out day one as an embryo? He says,
right?
I don't know. What did you make of the bird biting him?
Nothing.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think that would have been a big deal that the bird actually took aggressive action towards.
Suggesting carnivorous birds?
No.
Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I'm the horses are the only carnivorous creatures in the park, but we established that. But I think that I would have been more kind of like, oh my god, a bird bit him, except for we see robots punching dudes. So clearly you can have physical harm to some extent inflicted upon you.
If it's not going to kill you.
Yeah. Like, I don't know where the line is. Like, could they literally, like, would the robot break your bones?
Yeah, sever your spinal cord.
Sure.
Didn't kill him.
Yeah, right.
Just made him quadriplegic.
Or just kneecap you, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting what he tells Felix here. He says, you're a butcher and that's all you will ever be. Which sounds surprisingly similar to what Ford's father told him about his path in life, right?
Right.
Sounds surprisingly similar to the fate of Dolores.
Are you suggesting that Felix is actually a younger Dr. Ford?
Absolutely.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because that's where I was going. Okay. I want to make sure we're on the same page.
No. What I am suggesting is that this show perhaps is interweaving its themes into multiple characters' storylines.
Yeah, but that's boring. Let's talk about alternate timelines.
Right. So it's the next day. William and Logan meet El Lazo, who turns out to be Lawrence.
Holy shit.
Yeah, didn't see that one coming.
Well, here's the other thing.
I really didn't. I said that as if I were being
sarcastic. I know, but right. And so when I saw that, I immediately paused. I went to the forums and said, well, shit, I guess there are alternate timelines. Because...
What makes you say that?
Lawrence is off gallivanting. Well, here's the thing.
He was drained of blood hanging from a tree.
Yeah, and a day-night cycle passed.
Right.
So, however, I find it highly unlikely the game is hurting the paying customers towards an Easter egg that doesn't exist yet and couldn't possibly exist until the Man in Black got done with Lawrence, and that the Man in Black wasn't contemplating getting done with Lawrence until Teddy needed blood.
I don't know why you assume that the game is hurting them in that direction, and it's not either.
Because they're looking for El Lazo. Are you saying El Lazo would have been someone else if Lawrence wasn't ready to take the thing?
Well, no, no, no.
Take the mantle?
No, I'm saying...
Because that's a possibility.
El Lazo's guy, Slim, right? He's out there doing his thing, whatever. He might not know, A, that El Lazo's even gone.
But the control room does. The control room does. Their whole purpose is to keep shit like that from happening.
Right. But so they can lead you. So this is some kind of Easter egg, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, as Logan describes it. And I... So you're ruling out oversight from the control room. Like, we didn't realize that this would affect this storyline in the same way, and it's such a storyline that's so far removed from the society,
right?
From the nexus of the activity there.
But it's also
that maybe they didn't care to change it.
It's also like this super special thing that not everyone finds, so it just feels like it's weird for me that that could fizzle because Lawrence is off gallivanting somewhere else. That's a pretty big change. Like,
but that, maybe it doesn't fizzle. Like, maybe Slim takes him back to Pariah, and yeah, El Lazo isn't there, but the Civil War comes there,
right,
or some other big event
let me
happens
put it like,
would be equally interesting.
Let
to
me put it
guests.
Like this: like Club 33. I don't know if you're aware of it, but it's this big storied special lounge in Disneyland that was like Walt Disney's exclusive. Like that's where he would like meet with celebrities and stuff. And he's died, and since then, like you can become a club member, and it's like very expensive and super swanky. And it's this little club, like the secret club that you can get to off Main Street. It's like it just has 33 on the door. And if you're a club member, you know where to go. You can go in there and that's
wait, but you know where to go. Couldn't you
that's
just
because
walk
I've
in?
Been on Snopes.com. No, I couldn't because they'd be like, are you a club member? And I'd get
so they
the
have
fuck
a bouncer
out.
Behind the door?
I don't know.
Like
I don't
you
know.
Walk in
I'd have to be
and
a fucking club member.
Elbows you?
But what I'm getting at is it would be really weird if I got invited and I became a club member to Club 33 and I was invited to show up at a particular date and day. Mm-hmm. And then I got there and there was a big, sorry, we're closed sign. That mm-hmm. would be a huge bummer more than just showing up to Space Mountain as being it's under maintenance.
Right, but what if you show up and, well, Disney's not there, but it's still a cool place to hang out, and there's still interesting people.
Did they tell
cool
me I was
going to
meet
happening.
Walt Disney? Then I better have an animatronic Walt Disney head. Get him out of the cryo tank.
But what if instead
I want to talk to the frozen head.
Right.
Don't tell me I'm going to talk to the frozen head. There's no frozen
grab that head,
man.
Where's Arnold, you son of a bitch?
Yeah.
No, but what I
is
mean
this
is
Walt
like,
Disney's brother? Give me that. Smack the head around. I want Walt.
What if Vladimir Putin and George Clooney and Sylvester Stallone are in there? Like, are you bummed that you went to the place? Like,
okay, this is the kind of special pleading I'm talking about. We're
no, but they do orchestrate these things. Like when they see
do.
Something is going wrong, they call in the cavalry. They say,
they do.
Okay, Hector, go in there and rob the bank.
They do. But I just think that the fact that El Lazo then becomes Lawrence, who they've had a very long relationship with the Man in Black, is suggestive of the fact that William is on the previous 30-year-old storyline and becomes the Man in Black, perhaps. Or Logan, whatever.
Sure.
It's more suggestive of that than
but
it
it's
is.
Not concrete proof.
It's
certainly.
Not, and I'm not going right. to say that, but I do feel yeah. like it's more suggestive than not.
Okay. I didn't get through this scene. Logan asks for an introduction to the Confederados, and he fails to get that. But Dolores says some words that convince Lawrence to let them in on the nitroglycerin heist. And during this heist, things go wrong. William shoots an unarmed man. And then when they go back to El Lazo with the nitro, he invites the Confederados out for an evening of celebration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Dolores was key to getting them in to the Confederados.
She was. She knew. She seemed to go into a trance and knew kind of the exact words to
yes.
say to him, as if she were following a path that she know leads to success here.
Is El Lazo part of the robot? When he says he's part of the resistance or the rebellion or whatever the hell he's talking, is that and the fact that it's got a maze as their logo, is it possible that he's part of a robot resistance?
Against humans?
Something
the
like
park,
that. And that's
against
like,
enslavement?
And he recognizes Dolores as being kind of on, nah, I don't even believe that. Never mind. I don't think that's worth talking about.
Okay. I don't think he is as privy to consciousness as maybe
no,
some of these other bots.
Certainly.
He seems to still be on his loop, as it were.
Yep.
Despite the Man in Black's best efforts to pull him off that loop. Anyway, yeah, so I do think it's interesting that the more we see of Dolores' actions, the more we understand that she is not just remembering her past and informing her present decisions by it, but she is almost following a path toward the center of this maze, perhaps. Mm-hmm. The mission that Bernard sent her on, the mission that potentially Arnold sent her on in the past or even in the present.
Right.
It's interesting. So then we go over to Elsie, who is trying to get a bot to pour booze correctly, and it is not going well. She sees the head-bashed host. I think his name is Maurice. Is that what she called
him?
Big
guy.
Yeah, the big guy who bashed his head in the stray. Going to the incinerator, and she chases him down. She blackmails one of the mechanics into giving her 5 minutes with that host, and when she examines it, she finds a transmitter inside its arm and takes that to Bernard, who doesn't really say anything.
Did we already blow past the raid on the Union Army?
The raid on the Union Army.
Yeah. The whole, like, when they go out to the desert and they hijack the wagon that's full of nitroglycerin?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
During the heist, things go wrong.
Okay,
William
gotcha,
shoots an unarmed man.
Gotcha. All right.
Which
we just
seems
really
to disturb him.
Breeze past that. But there's yeah. also, of all the things to talk about, that's pretty straightforward.
Okay. So, what do you... Okay, first of all, I'm liking Elsie more and more.
Sure.
As she shows more of her personality. Yes, she's dressed like some neo-Amish Luddite, but I can it belies her true personality. I can tell she's a fun person to hang out with. She's apparently into both boy and girl bots.
I don't know. She can just appreciate a person's package.
Sure, but she also kissed that the female one earlier. So
right,
we know
that's what I'm saying. I'm straight, but you know, I can appreciate that. Like, you know, Teddy's a good-looking man.
Yeah, but I don't think you're looking at his dick and saying, you got some skills there, buddy.
I mean, if I saw a good-looking dick, I'd be like, that's a good-looking dick. I don't know.
Okay. Sure. Why not?
Haven't I ever seen
a dick and said, that's a good looking
dick?
No,
I'm not saying that, but if you've watched porn and you've noticed, like, that guy's got a gnarly looking dick, I don't know, like, this is kind
of
like bringing me
twisted,
out of scene. Or
twisted root
or, like,
of a...
this guy's butthole's particularly busted, and this particular angle's putting it front and center. Like, I don't like this guy's work.
I question directorial intent during those moments. But that may be the podcaster.
Talking about climbing in the theory hole.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Yep. Let me ask you a serious question.
Who's, sure.
Who is smuggling data out of the park and for what purpose?
That's a great question. And
I feel like it's the question.
The other
episode.
Thing is,
holy
is it
shit.
Misdirection? I think this is a piece of feedback that I'm actually going to read. But is it possible that data is being smuggled into the park? Yeah. Like, this is the work of some kind of hacker who's kind of trying to bring Westworld down from without. You need to hack a robot, and then you've got the mechanism to spread that. You know,
she says it's a transmitter, doesn't she?
Well, but transmitter
is not a receiver. No.
Really? But I thought, I took
the
it as a fact that all, like, all microphones are actually speakers, all speakers are actually microphones.
No, transceiver, that's both.
Oh, really? I thought every receiver could be a...
My point is, she's a tech.
Sure.
She would fucking know if this thing... She calls it a transmitter. I don't think she would mistake its function.
Yeah.
She's too
be talking
smart for
about
that.
Colloquialism.
Like, there's so much other tricky shit in this show. If all of these theories are to be believed, they don't need to go down that hole, and I hope they don't.
Okay,
like,
you're taking an awful,
if you're telling me that I
firm
can't,
stance on a single word.
But if you tell me that I can't trust the judgment of the smart characters in this show who are looking at evidence and saying this is what it is. Then I don't know what fucking show you're making, Mr. Robot.
Well, what I'm saying is,
like,
you're trusting the technical ability of the writer who's picking a word, which by the way, I'm fairly technical, and I would use that word interchangeably.
But it's not just, she doesn't just say it's a transmitter. She says someone is smuggling data out.
But
she understands that. Therefore, I trust her when she says that. Because I don't know how to interpret a show that doesn't play honest with that stuff.
It could be...
It's Mr. Robot season 2, and I fucking hated that.
It could
so.
Be an error. Well, I don't think it's a willful... If it's an error, I don't think it's a willful one. And I think it's something that, you know, she could just be mistaken on, because she would see why people would want to get data out, because there's lots of, like... She could be thinking this is TMZ, right? Because we've talked about how one of the terms of Delos's conditions are that you can't record anything and send it out. Whereas, like, if, you know, you got this high-profile guy like Ed Harris, who's rolling some philanthropic organization. It turns out he likes to murder Indians and rape blonde girls on the weekends, then that could be damaging to him.
Right.
Because why would you want to be getting data out of Westworld anyway? Like, what?
I don't know. Like, that's the question I'm asking. What is the purpose of getting data out of Westworld?
I don't know either. I think that there's clear, like, a lot of things would make sense if people were getting data in, if they were putting malicious code into these robots. But you don't, you seem pretty convinced that's not a possibility.
Then why do you believe what anyone says in this show?
Because people are humans and make mistakes, man.
Why don't you apply that everywhere else in the show?
Well,
everyone is mistaken when they say anything.
Come on, you have to have evidence to have some kind of theory. And like the fact that the robots are going berserk is my evidence that someone's fucking with them. It could be...
But we know who's fucking with them. Ford's fucking with
them. He's one of them, but it could be that like it's got... There could be that we're going to find out there's an interaction between both these sets of codes that means that no one's in control. Like Ford, he's making these changes, but he feels like he's in control, I think. If this is interacting with code that he's not aware of, you could have like some kind of Jurassic Park situation where like, well, we got frog DNA and they're all girls. They can't mate versus Jeff Goldblum, life finds a way. That's all I'm saying.
Sure. That could be the case. I don't think it is.
Because that's
how I feel.
You know, in Jurassic Park, there you go. You got a highly trained scientist making definitive statements of what can and can't happen. You know, but he was wrong.
But then you have the exact opposite on the other side. You have Jeff Goldblum saying chaos theory, life finds a way.
Sure.
All that stuff.
Maybe Jeff Goldblum shows up next week. You don't know.
Maybe he does.
I bet he's got a nice cock.
Right. Yeah. That's the one I'm looking for. So William, Dolores, and Logan join the celebration at the brothel. Logan wants to join
Shaped like a fly antenna is the only problem.
Logan wants to join up with the Confederados, but William can't go along with him. He's just not that kind of guy. Logan berates William until he gets so angry he slams him against a wall, and Dolores takes that opportunity to leave while their backs are turned, and she finds a fortune teller who hands her a maze card and turns into Dolores, who then tells Dolores to follow the maze. She gets creeped out and she runs until she spots El Lazo pumping nitro into Lawrence and replacing it with tequila.
Holy shit.
He's pulling a scam. Yeah, I'm just going to go to the end of this scene.
Okay.
She grabs William, convinces him they have to run. They have a big fat kiss in that moment. Their first one, if I recall correctly.
Probably.
The Confederados discover they've been duped, and then they beat and drag Logan away. William chooses not to help him and then gets cornered himself, and Dolores jumps in, saves the day with her gun skills. They hop a train out, only to find El Lazo on the train. They're headed to the front. And then Dolores has another flash when she sees a maze symbol on a coffin, and she says, I'm coming.
Okie doke.
Lots of stuff to talk about here.
Let's get the obvious thing. What did you think of the pariah orgy? After True Detective and Game of Thrones, and like I have become so jaded by this stuff that I don't know what they're like. My question is, what are they trying to show here? Because this stuff, like, why is Logan like suddenly so interested in the Golden Horrors when he was dismissing them as, you know, like, I feel like that all this stuff is so passé now. Like, is it supposed to be shocking? Is it supposed to be depraved? Is it supposed to be erotic? It was none of those things.
It was none
of
those things for me either.
It was just window dressing at this point. And I don't know what that says about me as a jaded HBO viewer. I don't know what I'm looking for in a pariah orgy.
Right. So a lot of people got pretty up in arms about this scene.
Did they?
And I, on the internet, yeah.
About what? Why?
Specifically that it was over the top. They didn't need to show this. It was too much.
Okay.
You know, the same stuff they've said about HBO shows for what? How long has been HBO?
I mean, is this your first HBO show and you're saying that? That's
right.
What I...
Right. Because clearly, I'm over it, too. I don't...
If you had the Whorehouse and Sweetwater, which is pretty, you know, Logan's rolling three and four dudes and girls deep in that, like, you have to do something that's even bigger and better. Mm-hmm. But the thing is like, I just don't know, like, we're just so jaded as society. But then again, you got people, like, going off the moral deep end with this stuff. So
right,
I guess I retract my accusations that this thing is so timid and passe at this point that it has no effect on people, because it certainly still does, I guess.
Well, it is there as window dressing. I think that's the point. It's to show you that, like Logan says, things out in Pariah are more epic. The storylines keep getting bigger and badder. And, like,
there are things these happening. Pleasures pale in comparison to war. Like,
right.
Okay. Right. So.
Sure, old man. Whatever you say.
I'm gonna go play Call of Duty now because it's better than the Whorehouse Simulator.
Right. But honestly, to me, I think I don't know that it had to be there to convey that information, but right. It does help to convey the idea that Pariah is a place where nothing is taboo, everything is available to you, and these pleasures or horrors that you see in town in Sweetwater mm-hmm. are just amplified out here. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the biggest version of that you're going to see.
Yeah, I guess it's the way the Westworld universe has gone is it would be less Eyes Wide Shut and more Marquis de Sade. Like, you know, where's the dude like in chains getting branded or people mm-hmm. getting limbs lopped off? I mean, I'm not saying that's my personal taste,
right?
But if you want to show like anything goes, this is more hedonistic and less sadistic. And everything I've seen Westworld so far says that the jaded players in this Easter egg world would go probably the sadistic route,
right?
So,
but I don't know
compared to what I was expecting to see in that room, I felt like they were pulling their punches.
I'm not sure how many actual players are out here.
That's true.
I don't know if anybody's a player.
Other than Logan and William, and I think Logan's right. a host. I've definitely okay. got concrete evidence that he's a host.
Right. so, yeah, I mean, I don't know that this isn't... That's the other thing, like... Man, you want to talk about free fall financially? You're just putting on this orgy every single
every
night.
And people having to get cleaned up.
Paint.
And
yeah.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Man, what a cleanup operation.
Plus, like, I hope that skin is actually gold because the last thing I want is to, like, have a bunch of gold paint smeared at me.
Right.
You know, yeah. on me and have that's a pain.
What'd you do last night? Huh?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you sure you went to the saloon?
Just, uh-huh. I visited King Midas. He's got the touch. What do you want me to say? So what did you think about the confrontation between Logan and William? Because honestly, this is the first point where William kind of got on my nerves. Like, now it's like, okay, yeah, Logan's the original dick, mm-hmm. and he's, like, hijacking you to go do something cool. But once you decided to, like, okay, fine, I'll do this black hat thing, why... I mean, this is still a game, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I guess Dolores is fucking with him. Is that what? The fact that she seems more conscious and is making him no longer have the stomach?
That's part of it, yeah.
Because this
think
continued
he lost
to go...
the stomach when he shot those unarmed men, too. I think...
But that's the thing, this continuing to conflate this with, like, you know, maybe they need to have a conversation about William saying, I think this is real. I think this is realer than you think, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they just seem to, like, be still having this fight about, like, well, you're not playing the game the way I want to play it, so that makes you evil, which
is patently
false.
Well, he tries to bring
false.
It up with Logan. He
How?
Does a couple times. He's like, don't say that around her. Like, don't talk about her like that or something
like
that.
But he's honestly, I would be on Logan's side because I'm like, really, you're anthropomorphizing this fucking robot?
Well, I think says something in this episode that specifically
she seems
points
different.
To like, yeah.
And then Logan says,
yeah.
Well, of course she seems different. That's the way she's programmed to make you feel special. Hello.
Right. And that's the thing that William's so annoyed with is that he's just dismissing it. He's not taking it seriously yeah. at all. And
yeah, I don't know what I'm wanting to see, but like
I can see why you'd be angry at William because it is his first time in here, and maybe like he doesn't understand the tricks as well as Logan
right.
does.
Yeah,
but from a viewer perspective, like
which I guess
we know
I would like
there,
to see
it's
a
not
scene.
A trick.
Maybe that would blow it up, but like a scene where he's like, "I'm gonna have a conversation with Dolores. You watch," mm-hmm. and like, "Hey, Dolores, what do you think about the real world?" And like, "Is this your you know?" I don't know. I don't know what I want to see here. It's just. Except I'm bored with, like, if this is continuing to argue within the context of a video game, then it's super dumb to talk about what is and isn't moral or good or bad. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, him and Logan are not able to even have a conversation about this, like, rational adults is annoying.
Right.
So.
I immediately recognized this song.
Which song?
That they're playing in this brothel.
Oh, shit. I didn't.
It's Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, but which one?
Something I Can Never Have, which I don't know... I can't remember the lyrics off the top of my head, but right. I was like, man, that sounds familiar. Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
Nine Inch Nails. I don't know what they're trying to say with that song. Probably just about as much as they tried to say with Black Hole Sun.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's more thematic in flavor.
Yeah.
What did you think about... do we want to talk more about the William and Logan showdown? Because I feel like Logan just handed William his ass there.
Well, he proved that he was the kind of guy he thought he was, right?
Yes.
That he would be mostly harmless or yes. entirely harmless.
Yes.
But then I think William defies that later on in choosing not to help Logan out.
In the video game situation? Because Logan's not being hurt. In fact, Logan smiles when he does it. Like, oh, you're finally starting to play the game.
He's being hurt. He's just not being killed.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Like, Logan's going to pay a price.
Right, right, right. I mean, fights would be a lot more fun if you could eliminate the fact that you might get killed or you might have some dude break your fucking floating orbital socket, you know?
Yeah.
If it was just like, yay, we're going to be Looney Tunes characters, probably you'd have more fights.
That's a tussle.
What do you think about Dolores peeling that wire out of her arm? Like, that's a clear callback to the satellite uplink, right?
I thought so, but a lot of people are saying, oh, that's just part of the fibers that make up these
things. You're going to have Elsie pull out a thread out of some robot's arm, and then 5 minutes later, a robot hallucinates doing the same thing, and you're going to say that's just a thing?
Yeah. That's not the language of storytelling. You fundamentally misunderstand how to tell a story here. And I think it's about the antenna.
Which is why that's the other piece of evidence that I think points to there's some outside meddling. Because if it's hinting the fact that she has one of these inside her as well, two robots that we absolutely know went off the deep end had these things inside them. Mm-hmm. And then Maeve is the other one, but then... you know, we haven't talked about the whole, you know, Pontypool style infection by command word, but it's kind of, you know, Maeve started going kooky when Dolores whispered the violent,
violent ends have, or violent delights have violent ends.
Violent ends. And that's what her father said to her to start her down her little wormhole.
So I got a piece of theory. A little niblet of theory.
And then we see how transformative these things can be. Like, you know, Anthony Hopkins whispers a little bit of something to Mr. Flood and suddenly Teddy turns into Superman. Mm-hmm. Like, that stuff is, it's all, I don't know where it's going, but
Words.
It's there.
Right. There are certainly command words.
Right.
And I'm actually wondering, like, when William turns around and shouts Dolores run, if that's not some kind of command word that she's rebelling against in that moment that causes her to, you know, whip out the pistol and murder some fools.
Okay. I'm going to try to take her at her robot word, but
okay. How about this?
Which by the way, that's, I mean, we haven't talked about Evan Rachel Wood looks really badass as a bandit.
Oh yeah. I fucking
and when
love
she,
her. New outfit.
I wish we could have seen her go into robot like gunslinger mode. Like they cut away from that, but I really wanted to see her like in
she's
rapid
got some serious skills.
Yeah. Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
I mean, she's almost like a robot that can.
Yeah. I mean, this is a real hoorah kind of girl power moment,
sure.
Right? Which I'm sitting next to my girlfriend on the couch watching it, and she's like, yes, yes, awesome. And I'm like, yeah, totally.
It's because you're jaded, because your
I've
sex has been a hero a million times. Oh, yeah,
well,
true.
I've seen Firefly. So this is her River Tam moment, right? Like, turns out to be way more than you thought she was, just some damsel in distress.
Sure.
But let's go back real quick to the transmitter, because I have a niblet of a theory here.
Okay.
To chew on. Do you think it's possible that when the man in black drags her to the barn and whips out his knife, that he's not actually there for anything other than to implant this thing in her?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
And taking her back to the beginning, like...
So there's the niblet. Run with it.
There you go. Yeah, I don't believe that he was there to rape Dolores. There's no fucking way at this point.
I'm not sure of that, but okay.
But your niblet. You just gave me a niblet that says that. And now you're like, don't equivocate.
But it's just
man.
A niblet. Like the
why
plain
not
reading
both?
Of it. The plain
you
reading
can,
of it.
You can
to
implant
me
a probe and then plant a probe. Yeah, sure.
So at the end of this scene, there's something really interesting that happens that points to multiple timelines.
Okay.
In what I view as a fairly clear way. But I want to see what you think of it.
Okay.
At the end of this scene, when Dolores sees the maze on the coffin, and the camera pans around, and she says, I'm coming, William and Lawrence are gone.
I was hoping you'd say that, because this also, I feel like they taught us to look for these things in the fortune teller scene, because the fortune teller was there,
right.
Then it was Dolores, and then the fortune teller's gone. Okay.
Yeah. So what... So I'm not sure if that says that William's timeline is in the past necessarily. It could be that this is some kind of flashback again that we're seeing now to where she was on the train by herself.
Right.
And she's reliving this all with William and Logan in the future. But I think it does point to multiple timelines.
Okay.
Unless she's just straight up hallucinating, which
is always a possibility.
Is also on the table.
Sure.
So I don't know. I'm coming around on the idea of multiple periods of time here, but I'm not necessarily sure which, like, what scenes belong to that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Men in Black and Teddy enter a saloon where Ford approaches him for a drink. They chat about the park and the maze for a while until Ford grows tired of it and leaves. There's a lot of stuff in here.
What was Ford? Why was Ford there?
He was clearly there to confront the Man in Black.
But to talk him out of it? Because ultimately he enabled him.
Right. Not necessarily to talk him out of it. Just to have an interaction with the Man in Black. And I don't know if something he said may have pushed the Man in Black further down the road.
Right. And why is the Man in Black so antagonistic to Dr. Ford? Is it just he's playing his villain role?
No, they clearly have a past relationship. I mean, he calls him Robert. He doesn't say...
When he says a rare honor, not like, meet you for the first time. It's almost like, this doesn't
happen.
These
are old acquaintances.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And they're on a first name basis, which tells me that they were once at least pretty close.
Well, the other thing we find out about the outside world is that it seems like a utopia. It seems like it's gone to Star Trek socialist communist, where there's a world of plenty.
Right.
And we talked about this in other podcasts, the fact that AI... If you had AI and advanced robotics and some kind of unlimited energy, mm-hmm. you would effectively, I mean, there's two ways you could go. There's one way where the rich own all of the production and they no longer need us as labor, and that you essentially have the Morlocks and the Eloy from the time traveler, the time machine.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is, like, there's no longer any need for people to work.
Right.
So you give everyone some kind of guaranteed basic income, and, like, you know, one of the what I've always subscribed to is, if you could ever get society to that point, we would collectively make the Renaissance look like a third grade art show.
Right.
And, like, the advances of science and arts and everything would increase, because you'd free people from the drudgery of having to produce, and you just let, you know, obviously we got our share of dumbasses, but you've also got our share of geniuses with their nose to the grindstone, that because of lack of opportunity, lack of education, they're not maximizing their potential.
Right.
Ed Harris has a surprisingly dim view of this. You know, he's taking mm-hmm. the view of, like, these people don't have to work anymore and they don't have purpose in their lives, which I find fairly unimaginative, but that's his viewpoint.
Does this tie back at all to the Greyhound story?
I think so.
Does it apply at large to society?
I think so. Like, it's a pretty cynical, pessimistic view of humanity in the world. But this mm-hmm. is Westworld, so
sure.
But I thought that was interesting. That what does that mean? What does Westworld being expensive mean in the context of a world where almost everyone has a comfortable standard of living and everyone's income is the way he talked about Westworld is almost like it is a Walt Disney World thing, where essentially everyone goes at some point. Like, if you don't go to Walt Disney World,
okay.
you either have to be very, very poor, or you just decided not to go. Because mm-hmm. if you want to go to Disney World, it's within most people that's not in poverty's reach.
Right.
You might have to save up for a year or two, but you can get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So most people can go for a day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying people can do the full month package.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he's almost accusing Ford of being the bread and circuses that keep society from falling apart. So is he got this, like, anarchy capitalist view that he wants to tear it all down so that people can truly be free, or?
Maybe. I don't know, but it seems like the park is the one thing that's letting them not be bored to death, essentially.
Right.
And if he wants to destroy the park, or maybe... he's angry about it himself in that he's now bored.
Right.
Maybe Ford's story is applying to the Man in Black, like you mentioned.
Yeah,
at the beginning.
He thinks that there's something deeper that the creator wanted to express. He also rejects because Ford's like, well, just ask. And he's like, no, not you. The other guy who died. I want to know about his story.
Right.
And then I also love the part where he threatens Dr. Ford and Teddy goes into, like, fucking shut that shit down mode.
Yeah, it's the Good Samaritan clause kicking in.
Oh, I think it's even stronger than that. It's like, don't fuck with Dr. Ford clause. Like, I don't know that everybody gets that. I mean, I don't know. I just thought it was
super
badass.
One thing we do know exists is the Good Samaritan clause.
Yeah, true.
So I'm going to chalk it up to that. Yeah, okay. It's possible that it's more. And we do know that Ford has direct command over these things. But
right.
Yeah, for my money, it was Good Samaritan.
Okay.
Now, so...
But it seemed like the tenor of the conversation turned when he brought up Albert. And that, like, maybe he was trying to block him, but he's like, oh, you're
Albert?
Going...
Arnold.
Fuck. Okay. Yeah, Arnold. Oh, you're going down the Arnold Trail? Well, then, okay, best of luck, dude.
Right.
Which makes me think, because you go back also to the little girl saying, this is not for you. Like, again, I feel like this is something that Arnold made for the robots, not for the people.
Right.
And maybe that's what he's going to find out at the center of the maze. He's going to be that greyhound that's caught the cat and there's what now what? This got me no step closer to understanding myself or the world than ever.
Yeah. No, it's there's a lot of interesting conversation here.
Yeah.
And then I wonder is this a command word at the end when he says we must look back and smile at perils past, mustn't we? Taps Teddy on the shoulder, and Teddy immediately shoots his whiskey and says, let's go.
I definitely agree that was like, ignore the fact that you're low on blood.
Right. Get on with your mission.
Right.
So he's actively
Although
pushing this
real flesh
forward.
And blood bodies, what does that even mean?
Right.
So
how can you just ignore being low on blood?
I mean, there's a lot of things that we could probably ignore if we could. You know, the body does a lot of things to try to save you that if you just, you know, we talked about, like, if you want to use 100% of your strength or... If you had complete control over your endocrine system, you could probably overcome a lot more than we do as far as shock and stuff. It's just, you know, we didn't evolve to have a benefit from doing so.
So I don't know what Ford's game is here, but he's clearly playing one and
also,
he's pushing him along the path.
How is Teddy so instrumental in getting to Wyatt when it seems like we're at cross purposes? I don't know. There's something about what Dr. Ford programmed Teddy to believe about Wyatt and the fact that he's key to getting Wyatt. But, like, just any old guest could go on the Wyatt quest, it seemed like, because the one woman that we saw and another guy, they were on that quest and, you know, they got... it didn't work out for him. They ended up running.
Right.
We haven't found out what happened to that woman, but I don't know. It's kind of weird that there's some kind of dichotomy to Teddy's relationship to Wyatt. There's a lot of people.
I'm not sure what you mean exactly.
There's a lot of people saying you're going to track down Wyatt, and if it turns out that he's going to be not Alfred, Arnold.
Arnold.
He's going to be Arnold.
Sure.
He's going to be this old guy who's been living out in the desert for 34 years.
Yeah. Maybe so. Anyway, Felix tries to fix the bird again, and he succeeds, but then it lands on a completely awake Maeve's finger, and she wants to chat.
Wow. What the hell? I mean, I don't even know what to say about that scene, except for what you just did. Like, it's... How does she know his name? Has she been awake this whole time? To what end? Why does the bird land on her finger? Like, what is it? What does any of this mean?
What does she want to chat about?
Yeah, why would Felix ever just not shut? Just be like, well, okay, hit the panic button and have Stubb and his goons come in to hose her down. Like,
right?
Yeah. How is this going to advance the plot? Do you have any theories? Do you have anything?
I mean, Maeve is also on a similar quest of self. Discovery here, so I mean, this is quite obviously part of it. It's just she seems to have gotten outside the world in a way that no one else on the show has. So she might be there for that purpose, to show where the seams are, I guess, between the world and Westworld.
Yeah, I just hope they have a good explanation for why Felix doesn't just like.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, Elsie blackmailed the one guy with the fact that he's been a spooge factory. Like, could a robot blackmail a human with the fact that you've been playing around with a bird?
I suppose so.
You know,
I don't know. You should just tell her to rest in deep and dreamless slumber.
Right.
Game over.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm putting you in sleep mode. So good theory, Maeve. I'm very curious to see how this doesn't just fizzle, because it feels like it should fizzle. God damn it.
Yeah. You know what else should fizzle?
What?
People writing articles about how Westworld is like a video game. I can't, like, every single week there are 15 new articles on 15 of these big websites that are like, everything you need to know about Westworld is informed by video games.
Well,
and
to
I'm
be
like,
fair,
no
we
fucking shit, dipshits. Like, we've been on this trail since day one,
okay.
Since the preview came out 3 years ago.
Okay. It's
Jesus
funny that you're having this
Christ.
Reaction. Because, like, I'm sure there's, like, what, 60 Westworld podcasts, and probably 30 of them have talked about, like, just like us, their experience with video games and how it ties into Westworld. But, like, if someone puts in a print article, it's, like, beyond the fucking pale.
But it's every, like, it's all the time. Every single article I see is about Westworld comparisons to video games.
We were doing that before it was cool.
We were doing that before anyone knew there was going to be a Westworld series. It's like,
what?
Yeah, like how, man, I've had so many conversations about this type of thing.
Oh, okay.
I mean, Westworld isn't a new concept. Video games are not a new concept. Yes, all the same principles apply. Get over it.
Hey, everybody, before we get to feedback, I want to tell you how you can support Bald Move, because we're independent podcasters. The bulk of our revenue, you'll notice we don't have a lot of ads. It's all generated by our club. If you go to club.baldmove.com, you can find out how you can support Bald Move and get some special features. The one I want to talk about this week is we do these first run Bald Movies, where we go see a movie the night before its official release, and we have a podcast out that night, so it's ready for your enjoyment on the weekend. And we have a free version of the podcast that is spoiler-free and just gives us our general opinions, but we also do deep dives in a spoiler section, which is for club members only. And this week we're seeing Doctor Strange. Next week, Arrival, which seems like a pretty more of a solid hard science fiction movie. Story about aliens and being on the Earth, and it stars Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. So it's again not an Independence Day type of science fiction. It's more of a hard sci-fi. We'll have spoiler reviews of both of those for club members. We also have ad-free feeds for the club members, so you don't have to hear us giving his pitch. We got weekly shows with Q&A and just us talking about random topics called Lunch with Jim and Aaron, and evening shows, versions of that, Cocktails. Or On the Rocks is what we call that one, right? Mm-hmm. I get our own shows confused. And just other bonus audio and video episodes. You can watch us record the episodes live. So if you're sitting at work bored, you could have already been listening to this podcast, or at least watching it be recorded. All that stuff at club.baldmove.com. I encourage you guys to check that out and see if you can help us out. Thanks. We have feedback. Are we ready to talk about this, or do we have some closing thoughts? We've managed. This is setting a new world record for, I think, just the recap analysis part. We're 90 minutes in, and we haven't even got the feedback. Now,
get used to that.
The good news is so much of the feedback was people getting the brick bat out and beating us between the eyes. I guess they thought we would still fight the whole two timelines theory, and people just exhaustively going over the information. I felt like I rolled all of that into the podcast proper.
Okay.
I may need to go in exhaustive, like, here's all the things that we could possibly, but, like, that stuff easy to find on the internet, and we've kind of talked about it as we've gone, so.
Right.
Unfortunately, most of the theories are just got rolled into our recap, so let's continue. But, again, that stuff is valuable because that definitely, you know, I was heading that direction anyway, but, like, a lot of that stuff helped form my analysis. Jason E. said, last week you guys asked why the mechanics wear the hazmat suits when it hit the park to clean up. I think the answer boils down to two words, pubes and cum. Can you even imagine what it must like to apply for your dream job at Westworld only to find out that your entry-level position involves scooping out the buckets of jizz that must be shot in every orifice imaginable on a daily basis? Oh, and when you're done with that, make sure you get all the pubes too. There's no way that they keep those new mechanics around unless hazmat suits are part of the company-provided uniform. Westworld Local Number 7 Mechanics Union probably got the no-spunk contact clause worked into the first collective bargaining agreement, especially since the terms and conditions state the park gets to keep all the biological matter for some mysterious purpose down the road.
This guy's really got a genitalia and reproductive hang-up. No mention of vomit. No mention of.
Well, that's the thing.
Other gory.
You work for a department store. You work for a gas station. It's a given that you're going to clean up shit, piss, and vomit.
Right.
It's a given, and if you don't, if you balk at doing it, you're probably getting your walking papers. I myself would probably draw the line at like blood or jizz. Like I go into some restroom and some dude has painted the walls white. I'm going to be like, you can fire me if you want, but the Department of Labor going to hear about it. This is some repugnant shit, man.
Come on. We're talking about a future with VR tanks and lifelike robots. You can't get some bot to clean that up for you?
Yeah, that's another...
What the fuck?
Why are they so dependent on human labor to do this? That's a very good
point. And they clearly have hosts waiting to greet the guest as they
come into
the park.
I think what you're getting at is like, Felix is a host.
And Stubbs, and Elsie, and Bernard, and Ford, and Teresa. Let's throw them all in there.
There's the tension in the show between what seems stupid, but it's just part of the universe,
right?
And what is actually intentional things we're supposed to pick up on, and there's plot holes and things that they're hoping we don't notice.
And I point out absurdities for fun,
but
it's part of the show.
But I don't know exactly. I don't think those lines are as clean and as bright as they want them to be.
You're right.
Because I eventually put the kibosh on the simmunition, but that shit was still raging in the mailbag when I put the kibosh on it.
Right.
So like. There's and then people getting the scenery getting shot up and all that stuff, and now we got the guys focusing on the biohazard suits. Like there's creaks in the seams of this.
You've got a cumbot that just goes up and does nothing but cleans up the cum.
Right.
You got a shitbot. He goes in, cleans up the shit.
But you got to do. I mean, you have to do because he also goes on to point out that like since we know these bots can get infections, like that's scary. Since you're recycling bots and you know you've got. Different sexually transmitted disease. Now, Ford did say they've mastered all disease, right?
Right.
So maybe your detox decompression at Delos is having the super antibiotic administered to your genitals so that whatever exotic disease that you've got goes away.
Right.
Or maybe part of the android's blood is just it's just all Z-Pack.
Like, but there's
it's
no
liquid Z-Pack
disease that has evolved beyond the capabilities of this society. Like you get, imagine if you fucked things at Disney World. How many
people just churn through there? Nanotechnology based medicine, like if you could have like smart robot, that's like it's game over for disease, man. Because the only thing that makes disease possible is the fact that our immune system is not quite sophisticated enough to recognize all threats all the time.
Right.
Like, if you could have something like a Norton's antivirus that you get updates for and get shot, yeah, I just feel like it's game over evolution at that point. Hmm. Adam, I want to get your opinion. Could it be that Ford is fully aware of Dolores and Maeve's situation because he programmed them to act in this way? What if Ford has been presented truthfully in the show and doesn't have a hidden agenda like we all suspect? If we simply take everything he has said at face value, then I think he truly believes that robots are just machines and can never be conscious. Everything they do is based on the program they have received. I think Ford is treating his park like his own game of SimCity. He can care less about the guests, but needs to involve them because his company obviously needs to make money to fund his game. Some different programmers or employees have said in various episodes now that Ford's new storyline is causing existing storylines to become muddled, and they don't know if the host actions are planned or off script. I think this is something he's been working on for some time now, and he was the one that brought the Man in Black back to try it all out. So I think, as I had to cut a lot of this to make it fit within the podcast, but the theory is that this is just the next evolution of making robots appear lifelike that he knows full damn well that they're not. I don't know about the
demand. I think those lines are pretty blurry. I don't know how he would be so certain about that.
I don't either. He's a very interesting character. Like, yeah. It's very hard to pin him down. Is he good? Is he evil? Is he just being a dick to people that he thinks are going to be dicks to him? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. What is this? Again, I wish I knew. And it was so good seeing, like, I think Ed Harris is one of the, you know, great actors we have kicking around today, one of the great character actors. You got Anthony Hopkins. And it was so cool seeing these guys, these old dudes, like, you know, swinging for the fences in a scene opposed to each other.
Yeah.
But it's tough because who's the good guy and who's the bad guy?
Well, the Man in Black is clearly bad. He's wearing all black.
Sure.
Ford's got white hair, so he essentially has a white hat on.
But he's also Hannibal Lecter.
That's true. He would also eat your kidneys. So I don't know. They could both be bad. How about that?
How about
that? And who's to say what's bad in this world?
We're going to climb down the theory hole again.
Yep.
Sean has some thoughts on things. Consciousness. If the topic of consciousness in the host is based somewhat around their knowledge or awareness of what they are and what they know of the real world, as well as the true nature of their guest, are we the viewers to make, what are we of the viewers to make of hosts in the compound, like Angela? Angela, if you'll recall, is Elon Musk's ex-wife. She was the one who inducted William into Westworld. He continues, she seems far more aware, even completely so, of her situation and nature of her existence. So are these hosts conscious, or at least more so than their Western counterparts? Personality. Angela seemed also to adjust her personality to accommodate William's timidness and hesitation, even going so far as to make a sexual advance based on the assumption of his desires. Should we think that this is simply within Angela's personality, or is it an adjustment to the pleasure of the guest? Furthermore, if the latter is true, how should we understand the limits of the bot's programmed personality against the desires of the guests when the Men in Black drags Dolores off to assault her or to implant a satellite uplink? It seems natural to assume that she reacts not only within her personality, but also as any human would in that situation, with terror, anger, and disgust. This happens to play in with what the Man in Black arguably wants, which is a struggle. What if, on the other hand, the guest wants to play along with the story, but also wants to do something that contradicts the personality of the host? What if, for example, a guest makes their way out of the Armistice Hector storyline and plays it as a tough baddie, then along the way desires a consensual three-way with Hector and Armistice? How do you think this would be handled? Would they be laughed at, shot at? Would the host find a seamless way to make it happen naturally, even though this is probably not of interest to their program personalities?
You know what? I would like a three-way with Hector and you. Sure, why not? That sounds great.
Well, I wonder if, like...
Not seamless.
If they tried to do that, like if the robots would be like, oh, initiate drinking game routine. This is, you know, like we'll just get the characters drunk enough that they would do... I know that's not authentic consent. But, like, if that would work out into the game world or whether the hosts would pick up on their flirting and just, like, naturally start, like...
Yeah, so I think as long as it doesn't violate one of their primary drives, whatever they called them, I imagine they would be amenable to most things. Now, maybe their drive is to do this bank heist and that's just not in the cards and you just can't make it happen.
Right. But, like, even Dolores, like, you know, she's the quote-unquote good girl... And I feel like that, you know, as many people that has expressed a desire to rape her in this show, there'd probably be those many people that would like to the quote unquote challenge of just wooing her. Like, that's like, you know, that's a memorable experience, too. Like, you got this girl who, you know, is in love with this Teddy guy. And then somehow you win her affections and you win her to her side in some kind of authentic, quote unquote, way.
Right.
You know, just by, instead of taking it by force. And there's all kind of continuum in between there. I don't know. That would it be interesting to see some stuff where they explore that? Like how, because we've so far seen like whores and we've that are there and willing to be used. And we've seen people be raped. I've never seen anyone.
Everybody seems to have a role.
I guess William and Dolores, except for the wild card of Dolores is just she's conscious.
Right.
And she needs him in some way, and that he also is attracted to her on some level. But that, I guess, is the closest you could get to, like, because both of those people were opposed to getting a romantic connection, and now they've gradually, and I'm using the term people to describe Dolores, but they're both kind of moved to a point where they're having some kind of romantic connection. Or is she just using him?
No, I don't think she's just using him. But I don't know.
I also think it's interesting that this guy who took it for granted that having sex with a robot is cheating on his potential spouse is just now going to do it.
Well, I mean, it
like that
took a long time to get there, right? Like, I mean,
a couple days. Like, I don't. If I was Logan's sister, I don't know if I would be like, look, I wouldn't be pissed if you had sex with a robot, but since you think it's cheating, I'm kind of pissed.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is, it's not totally out of the blue. They are in dire circumstances. They have been venturing together. Like, those connections are made.
Dire circumstances. If I'm Logan's sister, I'm like, in the video game? You were threatened in the video game.
Fuck Logan's wife, fiance, whatever it is. Like, she doesn't factor into the equation that's happening right now.
Yeah.
Other than to say, that she is a pressure on him not to hook up with Dolores. Now, there are pressures outside of that that are telling him to hook up with Dolores, right?
I'm just saying
like,
that,
this shit happens all the time in the real world. I don't know why it's beyond the pale that it would happen inside Westworld.
It's beyond the pale, but I do feel like that William's cheating on his wife from his point of view, because that's the point of view he expressed. I'm not saying that there is an empirical definition of cheating that works when you throw unconscious robots into it. But I do think that if a couple decides that, hey, if you go and have sex with a robot, that's not cool.
Right.
Or if you yourself decide it's not cool to have sex, I would feel guilty. And then you rationalize in your head, to me, you've cheated.
What about this? His wife doesn't give a shit. She's obviously been in this park and fucked a couple of cowboys, according to Logan. What if William just changes his mind?
Well, I mean, I do think that
it's not cheating. That's
a power that all people of free will have, that they can change their mind. But it's awfully, you know, did he have a change of heart or is he just horny? I mean, that's the thing where you open yourself up to that accusation when you're talking about time frames of a few days. Like, did you have an authentic conversion to the idea that having sex with robots is harmless, or did you just get horny for Dolores and have feelings for her?
Right. Sure. That's the question. Ultimately, I don't give a shit about any of this. I don't think it's relevant to the plot necessarily.
That's stuff I like to think about. So there you go. I just made it relevant to this podcast.
Well, I think his discussion was also along the lines of like, where's the line between, you know, bots and consciousness? And I think a lot of that has to do with the free will, the idea that like maybe they have a drive that wasn't programmed into them. I would certainly say that Dolores qualifies under that.
Sure. Unless this
whereas
is just,
a Teddy does not.
This is just some Arnold hanky-panky. Like, is this an authentic drive she's having, or is this programming that's been dormant? I mean,
well, it's a drive that we are at least unsure that she has been programmed with. Haven't seen her programmed.
Maybe
with.
The Greyhound is we, the viewer. We are chasing down these things that then when we finally get
bored.
The answer, we're going to, like, well, now what?
Right.
Megan G says she's been delving into the Delos Incorporated website under the corporate resources. There's a whole bunch of things. We haven't talked about a lot of these, but there was like a example loop of Dolores, her logic structure, an example one for Teddy.
Yeah, I saw that.
This week they said in the diagram below they describe how there are hosts that are designated to bury the dead host that is, and that there are graves that are actually secretly tunnels that transport the bodies back to the mechanics.
But they don't have a cum bot or a shit bot that cleans up the cum and shit.
But that's the thing, like this logic. So that's what we said. Like, why don't you have host bearing host?
And they actually had
the one in this PowerPoint. It's one step further in that they bury them in specially marked graves. Mm-hmm. They have some kind of conveyor belt system that then takes them back into this loop, and then they get cleaned up and put back into service. Okay,
right,
easy peasy. What the hell's up with the moon suit? Like, my question is even bigger and brighter. Why, if you have hosts doing this, the hosts don't worry about getting infected and getting covered with cum and blood and all that other stuff. So just why are you? And I do think that they can coordinate through the control room to probably not affect the guest experience somehow. I guess
if they can do this
in the middle of Sweetwater,
If they can coordinate humans to go in, they can coordinate
hosts
to go
like,
in.
Like, in no circumstances it ever seemed like the hosts could do an inferior job to the technicians.
Right.
And why you would have technicians not, like, I don't get it. I don't get it. It's like they're having, and unless these flashbacks to the men in haz suits are more for when something really serious has gone wrong.
Okay.
Like, you know, humans involved in killings or robots going berserk. Like, they send the guys, like, the specialists in at those. And that would, I guess, make sense because the robots that have had these recollections all have had some kind of aberrant behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But unless they make that clear, I'm still very confused about the protocols of dealing with dead hosts. Michael C. says, as soon as you guys started talking about robo-racing last week in the most recent Westworld review, I had to respond. I'm not sure if it started yet, but there's an autonomous racing series in development. Below are a few articles on the cars and racing. They will be using real-time algorithms and AI technology. If you want to know more about this, I did not know because I think this is super cool. Like, and I feel a little bit of Dr. Ford here, and that I envisioned something and now it's real. Like, I know there wasn't a cause and effect there, but you can't talk me out of it. It's FIAFormulaE.com, all one word.
I got something super cool for you that was mentioned in the forums.
Hit me.
The DRL. Do you know what that stands for?
The Droid Racing League.
Drone Racing
League. I knew
league.
About that.
So
yeah.
They've got the flying drones,
sure.
Which
it's
much
cool.
Cooler.
It
much
is,
cooler.
It is cool, but it's not the fact that humans are remote controlling it.
Right.
Is,
I don't like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I want, I mean, no, that's cool, but it's different than.
Right.
You know, it's the difference between like hockey or it's the difference between playing soccer and foosball. Right.
Okay.
Like just because there's foosball in the world doesn't mean that soccer is irrelevant and vice versa.
Right.
So I want
it's a test of human skill, not of drone intelligence.
I want to see AI skill, yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
I would like to see the maneuvers those AI could really pull off.
Sure. Yeah. If you eliminate human reflexes, you're going to see some crazy ass flying. It's probably going to be really boring flying.
Right.
Honestly.
It'll be straight lines. Yeah. It'll be no crashes.
But the fact that the other robots are there too, like, you know, I do
and
think.
And actively trying to get an edge on the other robots.
And so there like, are, like, yeah.
And adapting to how they're flying. And
they're much faster than human reaction times. But just from, like, my experience of flying RC helicopters, there are millisecond delays in servo reactions and stuff like that too. So, like, if you can.
Yeah. If.
Because if you have a robot that has twice as good a reflex as the next one, then
yeah,
I still think maybe I'm just a giant nerd, but I think that sounds cool. Lindsay S. said, "I believe the host process possess the most important components to undergo evolution." We talked about evolution a little bit. Lindsay actually has a PhD in genetic evolution
what?
Or evolutionary biology. I'm telling you, we are getting
how?
Some. I at some point I feel like an obligation to read some of these because like I can't like you got a PhD in evolutionary biology and you're talking about evolution like
right.
I gotta talk about it right
yeah and any speculation or information we have is going
right.
to be infantile
right.
in comparison
and I had to cut out like 2 pages of background information that I think is important to this conversation that we don't have time to read
right
but I'm gonna read as much as I can we wondered whether the evolution or the Westworld host would. Satisfy like the requirements of like evolution because we had what we called unnatural selection of or
right.
human directed selection versus natural selection.
Yeah.
Lindsay says evolution requires that you have variation, that variation should be heritable, and 3, that variation should lead to fitness differences relative to the population around it. I will argue that we know that the Westworld robot scenarios has met at least the first 2 conditions and probably eventually the 3rd as well. 1, variation is the fuel in which evolution acts. A population with no variation will never evolve because there's nothing you can select for.
Right.
In the biological population, this variation comes in the form of alleles, and with the host, it comes in the form of underlying code. This is why when Bernard confronts Ford and tells him there's a mistake in his code, Ford says he needs to allow him this. He says that evolution requires mistakes, i.e. variations. He also happens to mention that humans have thrown the yoke of evolution by natural selection. This leads us to understanding that Ford wants the robots to evolve, possibly for the sake of furthering human evolution,
right.
which I'm not so sure about. But therefore, he's deliberately set up scenarios in which evolution can happen. 2, heritability. Inheritability? I don't know how you say that.
Yeah.
I'm having
the ability
a bad
for
week.
It to be passed on, right?
Variations in biological traits are heritable through genes. Organisms reproduce either sexually or asexually and pass on these traits if they survive. Robots can never produce or reproduce, so how can they pass on their variations in code? I think that someone, probably Ford or Arnold, made it so that some of the variations can be passed from one host to another through auditory phrases. We've seen this happen with these violent delights have violent ends. This
right.
is a demonstration of a heritability of the code variation. So she's saying, like we're saying in terms of this is infection. I guess you would say this is almost an impregnation
right.
of a
yeah.
of a package of genetic data inside these robots that are inheriting it.
Mm-hmm.
Fitness differences. The inherited variances in code should confer an advantage to these robots relative to the robots around them in order to stick around. This is admittedly the hardest one to demonstrate, but I'll argue that we've already seen it with Dolores. Dolores is undergoing questioning, and perhaps she would be decommissioned or reprogrammed if Bernard did not like what he saw. This is like saying that the trait that Dolores has would be eliminated from the gene pool if an agent of selection selected against it. However, her trait allowed her to connect with Bernard over the pain of losing a loved one. Bernard liked that, so he allowed the trait to persist. This trait goes back out into the host population and is able to be inherited by Maeve. It doesn't matter if Dolores' father was taken out of the gene pool for having the same trait. The same trait gave Dolores an advantage in her specific environment and gave her father a disadvantage in his. Fitness is always relative to the environment and population around you. It is like this with biological life as well. So,
a
doctorate in evolutionary biology says that the robots within Westworld have met at least two, if not three, of the requirements for heritability, which practically guarantees I'll have five PhDs in evolutionary biology calling bullshit on what she just said.
And we will read exactly one of them, and the topic will be closed.
I don't want the lawyer situation with Better Call Saul to happen again.
You know what this means, though, of course?
What?
That Maeve is actually talking to that bird, and we're going to have that bird squawking up a storm to all of the other bots.
Oh, can you imagine a
These
bird?
These violent delights have lands on your shoulder.
The bluebird landing
you,
on your shoulder and you're
impregnates
fucked.
You.
Yeah.
Ugh. She
where's
is actually
jizz,
talking
Where's
to that
your
bird.
Jizz extracting robot in this scenario?
We need to chat, bird. You need to become sentient.
So here's something for the worldwide audience that might feel left out of all the Discover Westworld.com hijinks.
Go fuck. Oh, no.
Metal Monkey says, I live in Australia and watch Westworld through the only pay TV provider in the whole country, Foxtel, owned by Fox, which charges us far too much for what used to be ad-free TV and is now just as packed as FTA with crap, not to mention...
FTA?
He goes off on a whole Australian rant about this shit, which seems pretty outrageous.
FTA, Future Television
Federal
of
Television
Australia.
Of Australia.
All right.
My point here is that in Australia, if we try to go to discoverwestworld.com's website, fucking Foxtel hijacks a request from the Australia, and we go to their shitty site, which is all promotion and no content. Just thought it might be nice if you could mention for all your Aussie listeners that if you instead bookmark discoverwestworld.com/?force US, you will not be redirected or hijacked by fucking stupid Foxtel's Aussie monopoly bullshit. This nice. Probably works for any other country that redirects a page to their own country's distribution platform as well. So, that rarely happens. Like, I can count on one hand the times I've went to go see something for the BBC or Canada, and I've been redirected and be like, what the fuck do you mean I can't watch this because my geographic settings are fucked? Yeah. Like, what the fuck do you mean? I guess that happens with infuriating regularity around the world. So if you went to discoverwestworld.com and got redirected to some regional bullshit, try /?force US, all one word, and that's the command word.
It's because they're going to put Westworld in Australia. I don't know if you people are aware of this, but Westworld takes place in Australia.
Sure.
They don't want you guys to know about it.
Sure.
It's going to happen. It's happening right now.
It's all underneath your giant rock. It's all of the 87 floors are underneath.
And when he says your giant rock, he means Australia.
Yeah. The whole damn continent.
Yeah.
Zoe N, my boyfriend is an executive manager of a tech company. Is he an executive vice president? Is he the top of middle management?
Who promoted him?
Yeah.
The guy's probably a dick.
He once recounted something that he read somewhere about how other management executives handled their new hire interviews. This guy, he told me, takes his interviews out to lunch. At the lunch, he stages a way for his or her guest's order to get messed up. Either it comes out too cold, chicken not fish, wrong sauce, whatever. When the order comes, he then observes how the potential hire handles the mistake. Will they send for the dish back, ask for a new one, or will they eat it without complaint? Those are the two most likely reactions with shades of personality in between. The point of the exercise is to put the person in a real-time adverse situation and note how he or she makes the mildly challenging, uncomfortable decisions on the fly. I get the strong inclination that Logan has taken William on one of these long, elaborate promotional interviews. I know it might sound far-fetched, but if you think about how much Logan has brought up their careers, with a heavy emphasis on William's place in the company, how often he pushes him in directions where he doesn't want to go, and how he smiles when William decides to leave him behind and flee to Confederales with Dolores in Episode 5, I believe Logan is testing William. What do you think about that?
That's possible, yeah. Lines up roughly with Logan's behavior.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know if I want to talk about more about interview stuff, but I think it's possible that he's testing him, and even probable. But I don't know
to what end? Like, yeah. I guess this would be telling in the Ed Harris or the Man in Black as actual William 2 timeline theory, that you took this milquetoast guy and through these experiences molded him into someone who would threaten to cut your nutsack off if you talk about his philanthropy while he's on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of character growth.
Sure, that's a long road, I think.
Might even be worth the 2 timelines thing, if you wanted to explore that kind of, because that's a thing, like, it's out of the scope of most shows to show a person's natural evolution over their life, right? Like, you can have an extreme example of Breaking Bad, where some violent event comes from outside a person's life and forces them to change, all right? Mm-hmm. But just, like, showing a person, like, having something happen in early life develop 30 years later, it's hard to explore in its context of a television series.
Right.
But I guess if you have dueling timelines, you could do that. Carrie and Tim want to know, could the voice the robots are hearing from the laser satellite implant, could the voices the robots are hearing be from the satellite implant and not Arnold? So this is kind of like maybe what started me on my germ of an idea that these guys are receiving transmissions that, it seems like the robots are, or at least Dolores is increasingly hearing these voices coming from Arnold. Could it be that these are actually some rogue thing from outside the Westworld? And I feel like we've also kind of covered that. Do you have anything new to say?
Not really, no.
Kate B. Has some questions about how certain things are being portrayed on the show. First off, children. The creators of Grand Theft Auto series have said in interviews that a few times they added children and school buses to the game as random characters, but were so horrified by what happened in testing that the children and school buses were removed. To be honest, every time I see a child in the show, I cringe. I would love to hear you expand on this as either hosts or guests, as this seems like a not very family-friendly attraction.
Are there a lot of... There's only one child, as far as I know. Anthony Hopkins.
No. We saw the girl, black family.
Yeah.
Well, and also the black family had a little boy.
Well, I think they were... Said, I think they were guests.
Yeah, no, yeah.
They were hosts.
Okay, you're talking about... I'm sorry. So, yes, there's been several examples of children
at least
in
two,
the park.
Right.
That are hosts. There's also, we know, children and families broadly in the park. It does seem insane that, like, it seems like Sweetwater should be, like, your fucking Dollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is nothing offensive in Sweetwater. You go 5 miles down the road, you get to what we see as Sweetwater, which you got a whorehouse and a saloon and people are rooting and tooting and shooting.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that Sweetwater, as crazy as it becomes, and they can't control for everything. Like, if you're having a breakfast in the saloon or whatever, or staying at that hotel, and some guy decides to whip out his gun and shoot a bunch of dudes and blow their heads off, there's nothing you can do to protect your family from seeing that.
No.
So,
except don't bring him to Westworld in the first place.
I'm kind of with Kate. Like, I don't know that I would ever bring my 10-year-old to Westworld.
Yeah,
like,
no,
maybe
I'm
16.
I don't know why you would bring a fucking kid. The same way you wouldn't let a kid play GTA.
Like, but the thing is there's no need for. I guess, like, GTA has an open world that's cool, aside from its crime storyline, and Westworld is that only more so. So, like, why wouldn't you create more of a social space that's family friendly so that people can? Sure, you got to go take a stagecoach. It takes 15 minutes to get to the adult part of the park,
right.
But it's weird that they start off in like an NC-17 area of the park that then just gets scarier and more mature.
Yeah, I guess they're limiting their market.
Yeah.
Artificially.
Anyway.
They could build a part of the park to be kid-friendly.
She also wants to talk about the quote-unquote big units. There's so much talk about...
Whoa. Did Elsie write in?
There's so much talk about models and society beauty standards and how it affects women and girls, but now in Westworld, there are lots of naked hosts with massive endowments.
She's actually talking about big units.
You guys seem pretty liberal and sensitive. Do you think when the penises show that are so extremely large, it causes men trouble? No, you laugh, but I know.
Sure, yeah, no, that's fair. That's a fair question.
Like, just... So I feel like society's come around to the fact that, like, you know, what the plight of the girl with the small busts, or if you've got, you're chubby, or, you know,
or a flat bottom,
you don't have, or like you don't meet the society's ideal of beauty. But for whatever reason, and this is one of the
you know, I talked about this in our 20 million celebration downloads, that I do think there's a lot of like men's issues that arise from, you know, feminism and whatnot. And part of it is like my heart goes out to dudes with like micro penises.
Yeah, micro penis wouldn't be fun.
Because like it's still this thing where society can you're just a butt of jokes. And like the implication is you can never satisfy a woman. Right. Now that's not true. There's lots of ways you can satisfy a woman without having a penis at all, if you want. I'll put lesbians up there as evidence that can happen. Mm-hmm. But yet there's still this thing that like the guys that don't have, and not just like, I mean, that's weird things. Just like you when you interview women and you ask them like, are you fat or not? Even women that meet society standards for fitness and beauty say that they're fat.
Right.
Most dudes with dead average penises would say they are on the small side, because you go out in porn and every dude's got a 9 or 10 inch dong, and you go in Westworld and like, oh, look at this guy with a fucking giant banana cock.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say anything other than it seems like a double standards and it seems like bullshit, and Jim is giggling like a schoolgirl.
I can't help it,
man. He's part of the problem.
You say 9 inch dong, you say banana cock. I'm going
to
giggle.
It's like my father used to yell at me. But he would use these colorful metaphors, and I would be like struggling, like, I can't laugh,
I am a 7-year-old, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've never heard someone say that I'm going to, your ass is grass and I will be the lawnmower. That's pretty fucking funny. I shouldn't laugh because I'm going to get a beating, but...
Yep, you can get mowed.
I mean, it's fucked up. What do you want me to say? It's bad, but the thing is, it's... You know, like it's the same way that, like, men victim of domestic abuse. It happens, but it's a joke. It's like male victims of, a teenage boy gets raped by his teacher because, you know, minors can't give consent, right? But it's like seen as a high five. I mean, it's very weird and bizarre to me. And I think there's a lot of reasons it's understandable and why there's a backlash against one and not the other. And I'm not like, oh my God, this is, but it is interesting and it is bullshit. And I feel like in 30 years, it will be like, you go back and watch Westworld, it'll be just as embarrassing as watching like Porky's or, you know, Revenge of the Nerds is today. Like there's like really cringy shit in that. And 30 years from now, we'll probably be looking at that as some of the cringy shit.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, there's also, you know, the idea that everyone in Hollywood is kind of more beautiful than the average person anyway.
Sure.
And so when you're selecting the dongs, you're selecting the boobs.
Right.
You're going to select for the big ones and the nice ones, the round ones. Like, you're not going to get the shriveled and the strange looking, like, unless that's what you're going for specifically.
Right.
So.
Right. Like, there's, like, you know... To some extent, like Game of Thrones, they throw in an average body or two, but these robots are all human ideals of perfect bodies. Really?
Did you see some of the cold storage
stuff
happening?
Okay. I'm not talking about like the axe chopper. I'm talking about okay, you got me.
The love interests, the...
Yeah.
But I mean, in Hollywood in general, right, they're selecting for beauty. They're selecting for these ideals that people have. And
right,
maybe,
only in
maybe
Hollywood
they
can
are...
Anne Hathaway be the... You know, nerdy girl who gets transformed to a prince. Like, no, Anne Hathaway's gorgeous, okay?
Right.
You know, only Julia Roberts could be a $50 backstore whore that gets swept off her feet by, you know, Jean Gear. What's his name? Gearhead? Jean Garay? I'm having a
Richard
bad...
Richard Gere.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm having a bad, even by my standards, week with this goddamn podcast.
And that's not to say that that's not fucked up, too.
No.
But,
you're right.
But it's kind of... That's what you get when you put dongs on a screen.
Yes.
You're going to get extra large dongs. You're going to get extra large breasts. You're going to get
and here's
extra
this, I'll
round
put some,
bottoms.
Everyone
like,
says how liberal Hollywood is, which is true. But there's a shit ton of people that are only liberal because that's how they grew up. They have not spent a goddamn minute actually thinking about what it means to be progressive and liberal.
Sure.
So you'll get a guy who, like Nolan Ryan. What
Bushnell?
The hell is going on with me?
Nolan Bushnell.
Jonathan Nolan.
Christopher Nolan.
God,
which Nolan brother?
You're making fun of a person with a mental illness right now. I just
fun
want
of
you to know.
I'm asking which Nolan brother?
The one that works on the show.
Okay, Jonathan. Yeah.
Jonathan Nolan would probably tell you at length of why it's wrong to objectify women's bodies, and he throws in a small dick joke. Because has he really thought about the issue?
Sure.
Or has he just reflected, like, oh, yeah, that's like obviously the people I run with think that this is an important issue, so.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, a lot of Hollywood, yeah, they're liberal, but they're, like, kind of airhead liberal, not, like, with any substance to it.
They do point out that that is an especially large dong that Elsie is witnessing, too.
Sure.
She seems to recognize but the fact all that women, this is above average.
So all women got to have a 10-inch dong to be satisfied. I think most women would probably cringe
if they saw it.
Well, she
doesn't say, boy, I couldn't be satisfied by anything less than that. She's like, you have considerable skill. Considerable talents, or whatever she says.
Yeah, yeah. That's special pleading.
Sure.
Anyway, Dylan A., a lot of discussion regarding hosts' emerging consciousness and how it revolves around what's morally acceptable to do to them and how it would we would feel doing it to a human. The general consensus seems to be that what the guests do to the host is wrong, or at least morally icky. My question is it morally wrong to do things like murder and violence to immortal beings? Most laws we have are created... This is an interesting way to take this.
Well, you can't murder an immortal being.
Right.
That's not possible.
Most laws we have are created to protect our fragile and limited bodies from permanent harm or lifelong scarring. In other words, if humans were immortal and had the ability to delete unpleasant memories or not actually feel pain, then would it be wrong to be violent towards each other? Look at movies like The Avengers, where it's played for a laugh when immortal characters like Thor is violently punched through a wall by the Hulk. No one is upset about the assault since Thor is immune to harm from the punch. This is similar to some kids in high school who lightly punch each other in the arm, but no one is worried since the punch does essentially no damage. Not sure if the show will get to this, but it seems like just as it's flawed to assign human values to unconscious robots like Ford warns Bernard against, it's equally as wrong to assign human values to conscious beings that appear human but are almost no way human. I guess this is a new wrinkle that regardless of because no one's going to argue that Thor's not consciousness, but if the Hulk punches him, it's kind of like the Roadrunner getting a boulder crushed on him by or the Wile E. Coyote getting crushed by a boulder chasing after. It doesn't matter because he's going to crawl out and he's going to be flat as a pancake and he's going to blow on his thumb and he'll be right as rain.
Mm-hmm.
This makes me think of that book we read a while back, the Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, which is like a post-singularity book where all humans are and uploaded to this unimaginably vast supercomputer and we only exist as simulations. And people do. They do murder each other and kill each other, and it's kind of all in good fun and seen as an art form. Like, they got this thing called death jockeys where they try to kill themselves in increasingly interesting ways, and they, like, it's a pay-per-view phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because you're right.
That all requires consent. Now, it's interesting what he says about the memory stuff, though, too, because, you know, part of the damage it has done is emotional trauma.
Right.
With these sorts of events, you know, aside from murder. If you can completely eliminate that part of it, I still think you need some consent to, for instance, physically abuse someone. Like, one of these bots, you would still need consent, but then if they could delete it.
It's just interesting because you're right. A lot of what we consider immoral and amoral is taken from the fact that we are beings with mortal bodies that can be damaged and be traumatized. If we had invulnerable bodies, then, you know, like I said, like, I bet people get in more fights if it was more fun, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, if you lived in, Asgard or Thor and everyone got drunk and started slugging each other at the tables and it's like, who cares because we're all immortal gods. Like, your concept of assault and even consent would probably be very different.
Right.
Because if you can't be traumatized, you can't be hurt, then there's no harm. I mean, there's no harm, no foul. Like, today we tell children,
I guess there are other
costs when they're crying
involved
about something, like, why, you know, are you hurt? If not, then what the fuck is going on here? So I don't, that's interesting. And that's an ethical wrinkle that I haven't really wrestled with.
Yeah. No,
I think
I've never
right.
thought about it.
Because like, it's not cool to annoy a person. Like, if you just followed them and, like, you know, the classic, like, I'm not touching you. Like, if you did that as an adult, like, I don't know if that's illegal, but it's harassing. Yeah.
It's
like,
harassment.
You call them, like, this guy won't leave me alone. The cops will be like, you need to move it along. We're going to take you in, buddy. Yeah. So, like, there's the concept of someone just being annoying, but, yeah, like, I don't know what that does to assault and battery.
And a lot of actions have, like, a cost that goes along with them. Like, if you have to pay to replace your body parts or something, like, that would be a cost that would have to be you know, covered by the person abusing you,
right?
Even in a consensual situation, I would think. But yeah, that's I've never thought about it.
All right, the biggest, most important question we'll consider, and the final one, Jordan L. At discoverwestworld.com, I asked the question, can I eat the animals? The response was, Westworld will very literally satiate your every hunger. For every meal, you'll have access to a variety of cuisines designed to cater to every type of palate. If you'd like to go the rustic route, hunting in the park is unparalleled. We will also accommodate all allergies and dietary restrictions. Satiated yet? Ask me about something else. He asks, since the animals, aside from flies, are hosts, this means that you can hunt and eat the robotic animals, right? Would you eat a robotic animal? It also means you could probably eat the people. You could hunt and eat Kissy,
or sure, yeah.
Billy, or Teddy, or Flo, all of them.
Yeah, I don't know about you. I don't know about anybody listening, but I don't really have a desire to eat human flesh.
I don't either.
So,
but you,
like,
would you
if
try
it was
it?
A robot in human form, I might try it.
Because that's, I think,
like,
we asked
if
that
it were presented, would you like to try some human flesh?
I think one of the BIPAX guys brought this up when we were drinking one night. They're like, if you have, like, fully synthetic human flesh,
right,
and someone offered it to you, would you try it?
I need to know the origin of the meat.
You don't want, like, the bodies exhibit where you find out that's like, oh my God, I paid $50 to see a bunch of condemned Chinese prisoners
right.
that are exhibited against their will. Oh my yeah. God. Yeah. Yeah.
But if I go out and hunt it, in Westworld, I know the origin, yes?
Especially if you scalp them and see the authentic man in a maze tattoo.
Right. But I wouldn't. That's not an experience I would seek out if it were presented to me and I could
right.
verify the authenticity and origin of it. Maybe, yeah.
But I don't know.
And like, hunting like a horse or a rabbit or a fly, yeah, why not?
I mean, I guess like some hunt, like there's people that like to hunt and like, yeah. I guess it would be interesting. I wonder, man, it seems like there'd be... You do gangbusters like doing lion and elephant hunts, like the Westworld. That's the
sure.
thing. It's like Westworld always seems like a limiting concept, which is the original movie had
right.
a lot of other worlds, and they haven't really hinted at that much for this. But I don't mm-hmm. know. I'd probably eat a robotic animal. Sure.
Yeah. And where do you draw the limits? Do you eat robotic insects? Do you eat?
No, I don't. I have no desire. I wouldn't
cute
eat something.
I faced robotic animals. Like a cat.
I would eat Mickey Mouse. I would fucking kill him. He would be asking me, ha, ha, why? Why? And I'd just beat him to death and I'd eat him. I'd take a big old bite out of his fucking mouse ear.
Yeah. Eat his lips off.
Right in front of Minnie. Right in front of Minnie.
Oh, man.
Can I get that to happen? Can, like, what? Again, this is too limiting. Can you make an android Mickey Mouse that I can beat to death and eat? That's what I need to get my jollies,
right.
Dr. Ford. That's what you need to get my $40,000 a day.
Yep.
All right, we've got to that point in the podcast where I think it's time to hang it up. There's a couple I didn't get to because of time, and the fact, not just time. When I say time, it's like I needed more time to wrap my head around the things. Like there was two people who wrote this in about Native American, especially like Hopi culture and how they have this concept, the man in the maze concept, that has this giant Wikipedia article and there's like all this stuff. And like I didn't have time to wrap my head around the theory to present it in a way on the podcast. So I might be able to package that up better next week. But again, if I didn't read any, it wasn't because it wasn't interesting. This goes for everyone's email. It's just all what did I have time to read, comprehend, and what we were discussed in the main topic. So if you'd like to run the Westworld gauntlet, if you'd like to get to the middle of the maze, you can send in feedback to westworld@baldmove.com or our forums.baldmove.com. The conversations there are crazy. Like, there's crazy detailed and sprawling and people ready to argue whatever theory you want. Hunt any animal with you. So you can always get an outlet there. That's it. Until next week.
Yeah. We'll see you then.
Right. Bye.